Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
Time to turn a new page in the notebook here. So today is the 11th, I believe. Points going fast. We're over a week and a half into the new year. How'd that happen? Time accelerates. You know, if you say time flies when you're having fun, you know, it accelerates when you're really having fun. I'm really having fun. It was just yesterday. I was doing a radio show, and here we are again. So we're just waiting for the lovely and talented Bill Fecky to check in. And we got the Fecky report. Then we've got Wendy Arthur with the Oh My God report. And then we got an hour where we can chat. And then we've got Diane Warner with the new election integrity and medical freedom report, because she actually has two specialties. So, you know, rather than give her two reports, I just kind of, you know, merged them together. And so it's a big day. The title of the show today, The Insights of Dick Morris. He knows Democrats. Something fascinating about Dick Morris, because he did work for the Clintons. I mean, he helped get Bill Clinton elected, which is kind of a horrible thought. But the second thing is, because he helped do that, he knows Democrats better than anybody. And I found more and more that his insights into politics are absolutely brilliant. I've tried to get him on the show. Try my best, you know, but the minions, the gatekeepers, because of the massive censorship we're under, it's hard to break through a lot of times. But once we are a huge, you know, household word, and you know, the nation has caught on to the fact that you know, we're going to make you know, talk radio obsolete at some point here, hopefully fairly soon. We're like the jazz singer, you know, when it comes to silent movies, and so we're the first talking film in a world of silent movies. We're the first action radio show in a world of talk radio. So it's really quite interesting. But you know, whenever you're the first to do something, it takes longer. You have to do more, and it's kind of a pain in the butt. But that's okay. Since this is where it all started, this is where we're going to go for it. All right. So let's get to Bill and find out. He's got a lot of things to this. I'm really glad to have him back on. I know he took a little break there over Christmas, and you know, maybe I'll play him Jingle Bells or something like that someday. But in the meantime, let's get to, or let me scroll down here real quickly, the Fetke Report.
Hold on tight. Action Radio presents the Fetke Report.
In Action Radio land, resident Biden wants to get rid of gas stoves because the false claim that they cause asthma with children. Obviously this is coming from the electric company lobbyist, but the important thing I just want to jump right into this morning is The Republican Party has made a splash in DC, and more specifically, the Freedom Caucus has become public enemy number one for both parties.
Well, I mean, they don't
exactly.
Do anything right, though.
Exactly. So, you know, I always love reading the headlines. I really will read. I always look at every headline, and I could tell right away who wrote it by just how they put it. And so the very first headline I saw yesterday was anti-abortion Republicans want to pass two outrageous laws, and then they found this far left wing rhino Republican. Her name is Nancy Mace out of South Carolina. To quote, "We learned nothing from the midterms. Millions of women across the board were angry over the overturning of Roe versus Wade." This is what the bill was that they're so outrageous about today. They want it's a born alive bill that states a 5-year prison term to doctors who do not resuscitate failed abortion births. And then the second part of this bill is condemning threats to pro-life centers. Outrageous, Greg. This is absolutely outrageous that a doctor should be punished for saving a life.
Yeah.
And
or rewarded for killing one. Kills the thing
exactly.
The contrary point of view. Yeah, exactly. No, I'm with you. Yeah.
So this is what they're outrageous about today. And this idiot from South Carolina who claims to be a Republican, Nancy Mace, is agreeing with all these left-wing nut jobs.
So that surprises me. I've been in touch. I've been on Nancy Mace's Facebook page. I've tried to get her on the show. Normally, she's pretty good. So this would be unusual. Is there anything explaining it? Have you read, you know, into the article? What's the logic? Sometimes, you know, it's like when they said Matt Gaetz was the only person to vote against an anti-terrorist bill. Well, he did it because it was stupid, duplicative, waste of time, and it wasn't what it said it was. And everybody else went along with it because it had the anti-terrorist label on it, but it actually, in fact, was a pro-terrorist, pro-big government bill. And so a lot of times, you know, if you look more carefully into it, is there something more to this that that is not, you know, immediately obvious?
Well, of course, you know, none of the right-wing papers are covering this aspect. And, of course, this is a major left-wing agenda point, and they are really beating it into the ground.
Well, they don't like her.
I'm assuming that they don't. Yeah, and I'm assuming that they're picking and choosing the quotes that she made on this article. But for her to make this specific quote has nothing to do with what might be inside the bill. It has to do with the name of the bill itself, which tells me that maybe she just didn't read the bill.
Could be. I'm on her Facebook page right now. Let me see if I can see something. What was her exact quote again?
"We learned nothing from the midterms. Millions of women across the board were angry over the overturning of Roe versus Wade."
Well, I mean, that's just a misstatement of what happened. I mean, Roe v. Wade had to be overturned because it was illegal. And the whole idea of a right to abortion, there is no right to an abortion. You can't have a right to kill somebody else. So, I mean, we know all these things. You can't have rights over anybody else, no matter what the issue. And so
don't have right for medical care. You don't have the right to medical care, period.
However, here's my however. The Republicans really screwed up in terms of this issue because they never explained it to people. So what I'm guessing, if I look into it more, what I think I'll find, and I could be wrong, but what I think I'll find is what Nancy Mace was really doing was criticizing the Republicans for not taking this issue seriously. And that criticism of the Republicans, she's absolutely correct, because they thought, oh, well, this isn't such a big deal. We get rid of Roe v. Wade. Life is great. And there's a lot of women that have been brainwashed to think that the Supreme Court creates rights, which is not true, that they can, you know, make stuff up and throw it. You know, it doesn't have to be in the Constitution. They can just say what they want. And that's not true, that the states could not, you know, enforce their own provisions, which wasn't true, that Roe v. Wade was actually the law of the land. That wasn't true either. None of this stuff was explained by the Republicans ever in the 50 years that Roe v. Wade was on the books. It was never a legal decision. It was never within the power of the Supreme Court to do it. It never had to be followed. And the Republicans went along with it saying, oh, isn't this great? It's finally been overturned. Well, it was never legal anyway. And not one single gelding has gotten up and explained that, including Nancy Mace. So that's where I fault the gelding old party. Yes, even women can be geldings in the Republican Party, for those that know what I'm talking about. But yeah. So where's the real – so if you had to look at this, what would you have done if you were Ronna Mitt Romney? You know, if you were head of the Republican Party, how would you have handled this issue differently pre-midterm?
Well, like I said, they had to get in front of it. And, of course, they never did get in front of it. Don't have the media behind them, first of all. And that's the biggest thing is that, you know,
buy
the Democrat Party
– they need to buy media.
Well, I've said this – well, yeah, I mean, you could buy the commercials all you want, but
no, buy
they
the
don't
media
have to
themselves.
Run it.
Yeah, no, they need to actually buy.
That's where I'm going with it. What I was trying to explain is that you know, the Democrat Party, the communists, you know, back in the 50s, figured out a way to destroy America, and that was through our school system. They started putting the communists inside our professors. And they've done it for years of brainwashing to the point where all your media people went through this process, and now they're writing based upon what they were taught on how to be a communist. That's what they're doing right now. Republicans, conservatives, people that go to Catholic churches or Christian churches, Christian colleges, we need to start doing the same thing with them. They need to get into the media. They need to get into teaching and teach the right beliefs, not this communist garbage beliefs. And honestly, in the communist nations, most abortions are illegal anyway.
I don't think so. I think, in fact, Russia, the average woman has like 5 abortions. It's a birth control thing. Check that out again. China, I know, has a one-child policy, so the abortions are huge in China.
Yeah, but
in fact, it's caused such a lopsided population.
They kill them after birth.
Well, that's different. Yeah, but
I think
China has an abortion. I think China has a huge abortion policy. You know, they've got a situation now because of the one-child policy. And in fact, Gordon Chang explained this. There's this fascinating dynamic where you've got millions upon millions of Chinese men that will never be married because all their potential wives were aborted, you know, before birth. And so because you only have one child, the male child was looked at as the more favored one, the one that's going to carry on the family name, all this other stuff. But without the women,
correct.
You know, you got a problem.
Well, you know, so that is actually changing. That has actually been changing. Japan now is starting to pay people to have kids. China is looking at doing the same thing because Japan isn't. China is.
Right.
But even China is looking at doing that now. Japan used to have kind of frowned upon. I don't know if it was actual law, but it was frowned upon to have more than so many kids.
How many?
You know,
was it
China
one or
now,
two? Because it makes a difference.
I want to say two.
At least at two, you've got replacement level, but because different people die early, you know, we just lost Silk, for example. I mean, Diamond, sorry, no, I didn't offend anybody. Diamond, you know, Diamond and Silk just died at 51, you know, and I don't know if she had kids or not, but you need more than, what is it, to keep your population stable, you need like, what, 2.3 kids, you know, per couple?
Yeah, 2.3, 2.5 kids per couple in order to repopulate the earth. And China's finally realizing that. Now, China lifted the ban on their child policy because they realize that they need women in order to repopulate the earth, you know, repopulate China.
So here's a question for you. Yeah, here's a research question for you if you want to take this one on. How big is the gay population of China, given the fact that so many women were aborted as babies? I'm just curious. You know, like the Chinese army.
That would be...
How gay is
that'd
Chinese
be a very
army?
Interesting question. Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know. Well, I think it'd be impossible to find out something like that because China is hiding information like that.
But it's just fun to ask the question. Think about it. If you look at any forced male population, prisoners, all right, you know, there are no women around, any kind of isolated male-only environment. I think homosexuality rises just out of, you know, human companionship. But I'd be very curious, in a nation where they have purposely aborted millions of female babies, what does that do to the gay population of a country? I'm just curious. I'm just asking the question.
No, that'd be a very that is a great question, and I it's something that I like I said, I don't know how, you know, the way that China controls data that comes out of their country, I think it'd be very hard to find that out.
Well, where's our LGBTQ folks? I mean, why aren't they bragging about this? Say, look what happened. See, China's the gayest nation on earth. There's got to be a source. Somebody's looking into this. Some sociologist, somebody somewhere is looking into this. We just haven't asked the question online yet. But you know, check it out.
All right.
Let me know what you find.
Okay.
Your mission.
All
to
right,
decide
so
to accept it, Mr. Phelps.
Let's
back to your
get
topic.
On to the big subject at hand, and that is a bill has been filed to abolish the IRS.
Isn't that interesting?
This is very interesting, and it's not going over well if you just read the headlines in the papers, of course, because once again, the Democrat papers are trying to state that this is just to cater the rich people, which we know is not the case. But the IRS is going to be abolished, and they're going to put a consumption tax in its place.
Oh, so, the fair tax.
Fair tax, yes. Consumption tax,
right.
Fair tax.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're going to have a huge marketing problem with this. And this is why. Over 48% of all Americans do not pay income tax.
It's actually higher than that. It's about 51-52. That's how they're getting away with all the stuff
that is over 48%, right?
Oh, wait a minute. So you said 40% are paying taxes or are not? I might have misheard.
No, 48, 40, over 48% do not pay taxes. 50% is over 48.
It's over half now. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's true. Yeah. But it's, I don't know what the exact figures are, but it's a few percentage points over half, which means that more people are not paying taxes, which means it's easier to vote for tax increases because those people are getting the benefits of not paying taxes, and they're getting the subsidies, the child care, the all the different credits and things like that. That's transfer of wealth. That's how the Democrats maintain maintain the party.
Exactly.
Too.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so now we're going to have a huge marketing issue with this. Because you're talking about 48% who don't pay taxes are now going to have to pay more for food, gas, car. This is going to not bode well for the Republican Party. I'm for this. I've always been for this. This is going to actually cause a lot of issues and could cause the Republican Party to not be in power in two more years and lose the presidential election if they go through with this.
Let's talk about the fair tax for a minute, because there's a couple of problems I have with it. First of all, what is the rate that they tax? What is the fair tax set at?
Well, they haven't set – nothing is set in stone, but the fictitious number that has been thrown around for years is 15%.
Okay, it's actually – well, my reading is 17 to 23%. Even at 15%, they come up with this concept called revenue neutral. Do you know about that?
I have not heard that specific term. I probably heard the definition, though.
Okay, so revenue neutral is where the fair tax or the consumption tax or the national sales tax would raise the same amount as the income tax. So the problem with the fair tax is that it's, once again, a Trojan horse. It's like the balanced budget amendment. If you read the details, it's a lie. What you really want to do is set the national sales tax at a rate far below the current income tax to cure exactly the problem that you're talking about, say 5%. And, the government won't have as much money. I don't want it revenue neutral. I want it revenue negative for the government. The government should, if you're going to go to all the trouble to do this, then you should have, people should actually have that benefit of getting that money. Now, what you should also do is get rid of all these subsidies and credits and everything else and just have a straight tax. But you also have to have a marketing campaign that say, look, you don't have to pay a huge amount of tax. It just depends on what you consume. So you can, if you want to save and be thrifty and just load up that bank account and invest in anything you want to invest in, then you don't have to buy a whole bunch of extra stuff, okay? And then here's and the other thing you can do. Remember when credit card interest was deductible?
No, I do not.
Well, you must be young. Credit card interest was deductible. Okay. So, but there was a time, when you could own an airplane and charge it off as a business expense. So what you really want to do along with this is exempt certain things from sales tax, you know, so like, or you along with this bill, you say, okay, well, we're going to go back and say that credit card interest is either deductible or a tax credit. So there's no penalty, on you for whatever, or for the interest, you know, you get a benefit because you're spending, you're actually, you know, improving the economy by spending money, and a bunch of things like that. But they really have to take a serious look at this whole concept of revenue neutral. That's a problem. The other problem is, that's the first problem. Let's deal with that one.
Let's deal with that one first, because this is the issue that we have with the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Too much is never enough.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have a tax, it usually never goes away. It only increases. Mm-hmm. So you may go ahead right now and lower your sales tax, but at some point in time, because the federal government has a spending issue that it can't get rid of, they're going to realize that they're running a deficit, and they're going to say, oh, we need to raise sales tax, or we need to do this. And then when you talk about sales tax, you're also talking about each individual state, each individual county.
Well, sales tax doesn't go to the federal government anyway. It's state and local tax.
Well, that's what this consumption tax would be. It would do that, but you're talking about lowering the sales tax to remain revenue.
I'm saying if you replace the income tax with a sales tax, it has to be at a lower level than the income tax. Otherwise, there's no point.
Okay, so the problem with that is when you got 52% not paying taxes, how are you going to lower it from zero?
Exactly. In that case, at the same time, you'd have to. Here's the thing. That's a good point. I don't know, except for the fact that you have to find a way to lower people's overall expense somehow. And I'm not sure. That's a problem. I haven't thought that one through yet. But there's another problem too. in that if you, unless you get rid of the constitutional amendment that created, that allowed for a federal income tax, then the federal government is simply going to replace the IRS with something else. So unless this addresses that issue, none of this matters. You have to remove the federal government to tax incomes. That would be, that's how I'd phrase it. And so, yeah, we're going to, there could be a national sales tax, or what is a better plan, this is why I don't like the fair tax at all, is that you go back to the old system, you know, where the states pay the tax to the federal government. The states collect the tax from the people, and it's apportioned to the federal government. So each state pays, pays the tax to the federal government based on their population. So that's the real cure. So the fair tax is really obsolete for just the reason that you say. People don't pay tax. The rate is the rate is too high. And so this is kind of a stupid issue. And as long as you leave a constitution with the ability of the federal government to tax incomes, it doesn't matter. They're going to keep both. They're going to both fair tax and income tax.
Because they're doing right now, the bill that I'm understanding the bill is just basically defunding the IRS. The same way they defunded Obamacare, but Obamacare is still going stronger than ever before because they did not remove it. Mm-hmm. And if they would have removed it, then Biden and his Gestapo would never have been able to reenact it.
Well,
and
I call this an Obamacare bill. Yeah, I call this an Obamacare bill. This is what I'm starting to call. In fact, it's a really good point you just made, that any bill that the Republicans pass knowing that it'll never become law is an act of cowardice. It's an Obamacare bill. In other words, the Republicans, got rid of Obamacare in the House, 70 times or something they had to vote to get rid of it? But as soon as the Senate went Republican, they stopped doing it. Why? Because it might pass. It's the same thing here. They're a bunch of liars. They're a bunch of cowards, liars, and geldings. So that they would never pass. They never passed it when they had the Senate majority. They never considered the fair tax. They only consider it when it can't possibly work or be passed. So this comes under because
you're talking about lobbying. You're talking about the insurance lobby, who is so strong and powerful, and they have ever since Obamacare went into effect, they have tripled their rates. Blue Cross is a great example of it. I'm going to use them as an example only because I had them in the past, and it's just not Blue Cross. It's every single company across the board. When I had Blue Cross back in the before Obamacare, I was paying about $200 a month for my insurance with about a $1,000 deductible. Obamacare goes into effect. All of a sudden, I'm paying $900 a month with a $9,000 deductible.
Mm-hmm. That's because you had to support the Dibbies and the illegal aliens.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's going to be the same thing with consumption tax, where you're going to see certain areas are going to be charged a whole lot more than other areas. In order to buy votes, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if you start seeing a special card being delivered to people. If they do get rid of this and it becomes a consumption tax, you will see a card being delivered to people, those 52% that will have their consumption tax waived, and they'll have to show that card every time they go to the store. That is one thing that they have talked about that before. And it's pretty much probably going to end up happening. So still, only 48% of us are going to be paying that consumption tax, which they're going to have to raise even higher to make up for the other 52% that are still living off government dole. It's just being repackaged a different way.
We should tax those benefits. We should tax welfare benefits, so that you end up paying back whatever you take from the government or us. Now, the first thing that if you're going to pass a fair tax, the first thing you have to do is get rid of all tax credits and tax deductions. So everybody pays something. That's the first thing. Then it becomes a lot easier to do it. So that I guess that would be the way to answer your first question. How do you market this? You get rid of all the tax deductions and credits and say, these aren't coming back. But I still think you need a constitutional amendment to remove the power of the federal government to tax. And that's the best way to approach it. Just like I believe a constitutional amendment to remove the power of Congress to borrow money is the solution to inflation, bad economies, and everything else. But a couple of simple amendments, one that just simply repeals – well, there's three things that need to be repealed. We've talked about this before. The 1913 needs to be repealed. The Federal Reserve Act, the senators have to go back to being elected by the state legislatures, and you have to get rid of the income tax amendment. So you do those three things. You get rid of 1913, we'll go back to being a much freer country.
Correct. Now, I do want to say one positive thing. There's a lot of positive things about abolishing the IRS. But one of the main things is that, you know, it's tax season, so all the tax memes are coming out. And one of my favorite memes that I've seen is the one that says, "We're gonna punish you for doing your own taxes, even though we know, you know." And I just lost my train of thought on it. But basically, the meme is pretty funny, saying that even though we know how much you make, you have to tell us how much you make, and if you're wrong, we're gonna penalize you.
You know, that's a really great point. If this came up when we wrote the bill, the mandatory citizenship question on the census, and one of the callers said, wait a minute, the IRS knows everything about you anyway. They know who's paying taxes. They know where you are. They know what you make. They know everything about you. This can all be done by computer. Yep. We don't need a census. We don't. The only census we really need to take is on the illegal aliens. We need to count all of them.
Correct.
That would be a good project. But let's think about that for a second. Why, you know, if the IRS already knows, you know, then why do we file returns? And it's exactly what you say, to see if you're honest, to see if you will comply. Yeah, but they didn't always know.
No, they didn't always know it. I do want to say
back before
one thing.
Computers. Yeah, go ahead.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
I do want to say, though, with companies, what you will see also, I do believe, is that companies will actually be hiring more people if you get rid of the IRS. There will be more disposable income. And like for me, for example, I'm an S corp, and I have three partners, and we pay, with the S corp, even if you don't take money out of the company, you still have to pay taxes on your personal taxes for profit. Even if you leave the profit in the business and don't take it out, you still get charged. You still get taxed on it. And so, by me not being taxed on it in the future, I'd actually be able to hire more employees. I'd be able to purchase more items. Instead, I'm worried right now about being – I'll end up paying over $30,000 in taxes this year. Between
you need
my
a better
three
accountant. Yeah, get a better accountant.
No. It doesn't work that way.
Well, here's a question about accountants, because this is something I've always done my own taxes. I mean, I'm a sole proprietor here at Action Radio, and I have to stay I do it anyway, but I have to stay a for-profit company, because if I ever try to get nonprofit status, I can't lobby. I can't do all the things that I set this thing up to do. So all donations, everything like that gets declared, right? Just because those are the rules, you know. But I don't mind pushing the rules, but I certainly don't want to break them. Was that rule that from the movie? Was it The Firm? You know, I don't care about an audit. Just don't lose. It was that kind of thing.
Exactly.
So, but the question is, how many accountants are costing their clients money because they're more afraid of their license than they are of actually taking deductions and credits that people are legitimately entitled to, just because they think the IRS, you know, looks out for them. Like the home mortgage, the home office deduction, for example, you know, things like that. How many people don't take that because they think, you know, go ahead.
I mean, because I've been on both sides of it, and I've seen both sides of it, to where I've seen
I've looked at life from both sides now. From okay, go ahead.
Anyways, we have a very conservative accountant right now, but you know, we still do the home office and stuff like that. But you know, I have seen aggressive accountants who have cost one of my friends $500,000.
You see, that's the other problem. They got to be good, but you go up to the line, but you don't cross it. You know, I mean, take what you're legitimately entitled to take, but don't take more. You know, but
it was one of those. Well, yeah, but type of things where
well,
it
don't do
really
it.
Wasn't. Yeah, exactly, and that's what I'm saying with the whole thing is that for every ultra conservative accountant you have the same amount of overly aggressive ones, and you know, in the end, it's just whatever you feel comfortable doing, and playing ignorant or saying, well, I don't understand this is not a good enough answer. If you own a business and you're doing taxes, you better have an idea about what's right and what's wrong. And it really
just follow instructions. That's what I do. I read the instructions. You know, they're actually fairly straightforward. Don't talk to somebody at the IRS. They have no clue what's actually in the instructions. You're better off just reading them.
No, they don't.
But this is a fascinating thing. That, you know, you are entitled. I mean, the IRS even said so. Take the deductions that you're entitled to. But most people overpay. I think I heard some staggering statistic. Most people pay over $3,000 more than they need to per year in taxes. Because they simply don't take what they're entitled to. The other thing is, did you see the Reason article that just came out? And I got Wendy on the line, so I'll bring her in just a second here. But there's a Reason article that said that the IRS is going after all the lower income folks because it's easy. You know, they don't go after the millionaires because the millionaires have accountants and lawyers. You know, so that's a struggle. Whereas they used to go after them because that's where the money was, the big money was. Now they're going after everybody. You know, they'll send out a letter and people are like, oh, no, there's the brown paper envelope or whatever it looks like, you know. And they'll say, oh, no, I've got to, you know, the IRS, they'll take everything. Well, they legally can't. You know, I've talked to the IRS.
They can't, yeah.
Yeah. I had a
but no,
real quick.
Going after the poor people has always been what the government does. And it's always been that case. It always will be that case. And the quote unquote poor people, I'm not really poor. They just know how to use the system. I mean, if you could Venmo $600 to somebody and you're on welfare, there's something else going on. Okay. Cause the welfare checks are not that much here in Florida. You get $225 a week for unemployment. I'm not quite sure how the welfare checks work for the kids or whatever. I know that there's in Florida, it's more about services. So, you know, you'll get your voucher for daycare. You'll get a certain amount of money for food, you know, a debit card for food. But most of these people that are
$1,000
for Mexico.
$1,000 for Mexico, too. Yeah. Where'd that come from?
So you do have a lot of people who do have cash available that are not paying taxes and probably should be paying taxes. I think that's the idea behind it. It's just it's a flawed system. When you're talking about a cashless society, you know, what was a gift? What was to help pay a bill? You know, what was earned income? It's such
a
gray area.
I don't want a cashless society. That's not the question. Listen, I got Wendy here, so I want to bring her in and play her theme. But this is a good one. We need to focus more on this.
We'll talk about it more next week. I got to earn my dollar for today, or actually 75 cents until the IRS is gone. Then I can earn my dollar again.
The IRS will just be replaced by it. They'll just call it something else. They'll create another agency, replace it with something else. We need a name for what the Republicans are doing. Without being too crude, but the term, you know, legislative masturbation comes to mind. This is the first thing I thought of, right?
I'm still waiting for the term limit bill. Have a good rest of the show.
Okay, take care. We just lost Wendy, so hopefully she'll call right back again. But, yeah, we need a term for something that feels good but doesn't accomplish anything. I think legislative masturbation, if I can actually say that and not be too crude, is kind of funny. All right, here's Wendy.
Here we go. Do you really want the truth? Do you have questions you can't ask in church? Welcome to the Oh My God Report. Wendy Arthur is more concerned with truth than propaganda, putting more value in scripture than religion, and more about you and your relationship with God than your membership in any church. This is Christianity with a Kick.
You know, I was just thinking, we were talking off the air before the show about possible topics. You know, this would be a great time to go into why we tithe, you know, the whole definition of tithing and how that fits in, you know, God's tax.
Yes.
You know, God only wants 10%, but the IRS wants, what, 50%? So it's a little bit screwed up.
Well, and tithing is not a tax. So, you know, I want to separate that thought from tithing because whenever you're talking about people's money, you know, they're already on the defensive. Tithing is not a tax. Tithing is given in honor. Mm-hmm. And it not only are you giving it in honor because you are acknowledging God for who He is, because God don't need our money. Money is just down here.
Point.
I mean, this is something we have to use as a tool to do business and to acquire the things that we need for our families. Mm-hmm. So that's it's not a tax. What this is it's a way to get the other 90%, because the tithe means tenth. It literally means a tenth. So God is asking for a tenth of your income. Why? And not just any part of your income, the first part of your income. Why? If God doesn't need money, why is He requiring the pay before anything else is done with it? Why is He asking for the first part? And here's the reason. Because that tenth is holy unto the Lord. when you give God what is holy, he makes the rest of the 90% that you keep, he makes that holy and blessed. It multiplies. If you do not give God what is holy and rightfully belongs to him, then it's just mammon. Your money is just called mammon. It's not blessed. It just goes away. All you're doing is paying bills with it or whatever you're doing with it or repairs that didn't have to happen. He says when you tithe, when you give God what is holy and belongs to him, then the rest of it's blessed. That means he rebukes the devourer for your sake. Go read in Micah. And he says, I will do that. This is what you – the benefit of giving me what's mine is. I rebuke the devourer for your sake. It means that flat tire you would have had, you won't have. That the washer that goes out that you didn't have to have the $250 repair bill for, that doesn't happen. I mean, he rebukes the devourer for your sake because the enemy comes to what? Steal, kill, and destroy. He's going to steal your money. He's going to steal your peace. He's going to steal stuff from you. He's going to make sure that things happen in your life that require you to pay what you don't have to have what's necessary. And it's just like putting your the water in a bucket with a hole in it. If you want to be blessed financially, you want it to multiply instead of go away and disappear into a bucket with a hole in it, then tithe. Yeah, give 10% of the first 10% of your income to the Lord. And that means you can give it to, if you're attending a good Bible-believing church and they're doing what's right with the money, tithe there. If you are not in a church or if you're going to a church that isn't doing right with the money, give it somewhere else. But give it to the Lord and his work. And make sure that where you're giving it is doing his work, you know, the way it says to in Scripture. So, and it's a lot of ministries out there need donations. You know, they're helping homeless people. They're helping people get off drugs. They're helping families, you know, get the help that they need just to make it another day. I mean, there's a lot of ministries out there that you can tithe to if you're not involved in a church. So, yeah, you know, there's your money tip for today. If you want it to multiply and you have, you know, God bless what you're doing, tithe.
It makes a lot of sense. That was my question: is how one can pay a tithe? Can it be done through work as opposed to actual income, or is it really just it has to be an income thing?
It's saying you tithe off of your income. Okay. Now you can tithe time. You know, because you can do all kinds of stuff. If you don't have income, tithe time. Because, you know,
that's what I'm thinking about my current situation. You know, because I try to do good. I'm hoping that the good work that I'm doing, you know, is kind of covering this with God just because of, you know, a struggling entrepreneur here. And so this, I'm curious. This is why I ask, you know, I'm asking the question, how can I contribute? How can I do my tithe? And I don't know, is it strictly a money thing to give to somebody else to do what I might be doing here anyway? I'm just kind of curious.
Well, and the good thing is God is a personal God. Ask him, say, I don't have money, God, what do you want me to tithe? But you know what? If you're making $10 a week, take that dollar.
Give a dollar.
I'm telling you, give a dollar because you will get a blessing. But that means the $9 that you keep is going to multiply. It's not just going to be $9. So, you know, I'm just saying that I have tithes as little as like 42 cents before because that's all I made that week.
Right.
So, I mean, but I look back when I was a single mom raising three kids by myself with no help. There is no way that my little part-time job that I was able to get because I was a stay-at-home homeschooling mom before she walked out, that there's no way on paper I could have ever made that. There's just no way. Yet I made the house note every month. I had food on the table. Maybe it wasn't steak, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Been there.
But the kids were fed. You know, gas is in the car for me to go to work. I'm telling you, God makes a way for all to work out when it is impossible on paper.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I see that too. But this is why I'm thinking to myself here as, you know, that I've always, as I've gone through this crazy process, and it's like the enemy has taken and God has put back. And this has been going on for a couple of years now. It's really a fascinating thing to watch. But tithing is something that I don't think about as much as I should. And it probably would make much more sense to do so. So I think that we definitely need a reminder on that as to you know,
but
why
you,
the rest,
you, need,
you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you need money to work with, tithe. I'm telling you, just that one little step of obedience opens up a whole new world to you. Because you're tying God's hands. If you don't tithe, you're tying his hands. Because he cannot bless mammon. He will not bless mammon. Because that's just world money. It means nothing to him. But what he will bless, what's holy. And if you give him the tenth that's holy, the rest of it becomes holy and blessed, and it multiplies.
Makes sense. Yeah, I got to work on that part now. So this is my project for you know, now until. So
your spiritual experiment. Yeah, see if it works.
Well, but I know it does. I forget things, and this is why you're here.
Yeah.
This is why I asked.
Right.
Okay. All right. Makes sense.
And as I had, usually God gives me a topic, and he did not give me one for today. So this is like random truth bombs. Just, yeah, anybody who has a question, I doesn't matter. There is no such thing as a silly question, because if you're wondering about it, or if it's something that's always crossed your mind every once in a while, you just never, and nobody's ever really satisfactorily answered anything. I don't know if I'll give you a satisfactory answer, but I can tell you I'll give it to you from the Bible. So.
Yeah, we should do that. I should encourage this more often with certain reports that people can, that you can text in, or you can do our live chat and you can type in a question. You can call 215-383-3832. We've got the Skype line for international calls. You can call us, you know, live from anywhere in the world. One of the problems that we've always run into, because we're a worldwide show, because of all the different time zones, is that most people listen by podcast. So we do a live show, and it's very lively, but still more and more people are listening by podcast. I'll tell you what else people can do, too. Our Oh My God group, our Facebook Oh My God group, is growing.
Yes.
We just have new members. You know, I mean, the new members are coming all the time. They're contributing. They're writing things. You know, I almost started as a joke. I'm thinking, let's have an Oh My God group, right? The title is kind of funny. But the more I did it, the more people, you know, took it seriously and showed me that, yeah, there's something really here, that there's a need to talk about this. On social media. I don't know how many other social media sites do what we do in a way that is as open as we are, that isn't part of a ministry, that isn't part of a church, but it allows people to express, you know, anything, you know, and ask any question, and it's okay. And so that's something that's another place people can reach us. I don't currently have a call or anything on live chat right now, so we don't have a question at this time. I, of course, had one for you, but I had a couple of them that I threw at you. Last minute, which is kind of how we do things. I'm fascinated with the Catholic Church because I don't know a lot about it. I've had friends that were Catholic. You know, when I grew up around Boston in Lexington, and there were, you know, some of my best friends were Catholics, you know, and Jewish and Protestant and everything else. But the Catholic Church, you know, the whole idea of a pope, is the pope, do they literally consider this God's representative just because they ordained this person? Or how, and what's all the, you know, everybody was covering the funeral. And in fact, you actually saw the dead body of, I think it was Benedict or Francis or one of them. I lose track of my popes.
Yeah, the previous
pope,
yeah.
Yeah, but they're right there. It's like, okay, well, that's interesting. And I've been to the Vatican. I mean, there, you want to talk about high rent? I mean, the Vatican is unbelievable. I mean, it's the most beautiful, opulent building. And yet they still have the collection box everywhere. And I watch these poor Italian women, you know, wearing black, like Greek women. You know, you reach a certain age, you have to start wearing black. And they were donating what appeared to be some of the last of their money to the Catholic Church. I'm thinking, you know what? That may be tithing, but I don't know if the Catholic Church really needs it. You know, when you see all the splendor and the gold and everything else that's in the Vatican. And I walked all over. I went even up on those towers where the stairway gets crooked. You know, because they carved the stairway into the top of these round domes, and you have to walk at an angle. I was there. You know, I saw that stuff.
Well, the Vatican has a lot to answer for.
Okay.
And, more and more things will be exposed about the Vatican. And the Catholics look at the Pope as literally just God on earth. That he whatever the Pope says, God says. I mean, that's how high they hold him. And the Popes are some of the most corrupt individuals on earth. And you can tell me what is wrong with this picture.
Mm-hmm.
The church tells you you have to take a vow of poverty. But you yourself saw that they are not living in poverty at the Vatican.
Oh,
they
yeah.
have literally basement full of priceless works of art.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own bank. That's how much money they have.
Yeah.
They own
property everywhere.
Yet,
all those churches around the world, that's real estate.
And they're not doing good things with it either.
Yeah.
And the Pope that just died was fixing to tell people about some of the things that go on in those underground rooms.
Oh, that's interesting.
And
how convenient.
And yes, and all of a sudden he wakes up dead. So,
well, actually,
he was up there.
He didn't wake up.
But
he didn't wake up. That was the problem. I'm just teasing you.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, I'm being facetious. But, you know, there's a lot going on in the Vatican that's fixing to be exposed.
Mm.
And people are going to drop their jaws as to the heinous, wicked, evil things going on there. Has been for years.
How did the Catholic Church get started? I mean, we may want to take several more shows on this. But at what point did they split from, you know, Jesus and the apostles and the original, after Jesus was crucified, the original Christianity, when the church first got going? At some point along the way, you know, the Catholics split off. I'm sort of like lacking my religious history. When did that happen, or is this something you want to like present later? But what's the basic idea?
I don't know when that happened. I just know that Constantine,
okay.
you know, it happens somewhere around his era.
600 AD, maybe? Is that about when we're talking about, or earlier than that, or 300?
Pionki probably know, but I don't.
yeah. Okay, all right, we'll look it up. I mean, this is an interesting topic. But the Catholic Church split, and why did they leave? What was their problem? I know what Henry VIII's problem was with Protestantism, but what was the Catholic problem?
Well, the problem is, the wrong deity. You know, Jesus was every denomination has a revelation basically that they have built their denomination on.
Okay.
The Catholics were really, really good at understanding the revelation of Jesus's crucifixion on the cross and what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And then it got perverted along the way because then it wasn't about Jesus anymore. It was about Mary. And then it was about the Pope. And then it was about calling the priest father, when scripture clearly says, do not call anybody father except God.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. There's all kinds of perversions and deviant, just butchering of the scriptures.
This is what I'm curious about. See, I've always been fascinated by the turn towards Mary, and it's always the Virgin Mary. Like, it doesn't matter anything else about her, but the fact that she was virgin, and it's almost like they think that all women have to be virgin or not, you know, or the other extreme, and it gets weird. I mean, Catholics have like a weird view of women. The priests have to be men, but they have to be celibate. You know, two things that are completely unnatural for any profession, really.
Exactly. And matter of fact, there is scripture that says, do not require that. You do not forbid to marry.
Ooh.
And what does the Catholic Church do?
Do you have a quote on that? Which chapter and verse and which book? You don't have to have it now.
Let me see if I can
find
that really quick.
Okay.
Yep. Come on now.
She's got a God computer, little... by the way. It goes direct to the pipeline. You know, in fact, God hasn't called in this morning, but you never know. He does that periodically on the show. The phone rings. It's amazing. See, but the reason I want this is because this voice destroys the justification for the priesthood. I mean, this verse destroys the whole justification. You know, this whole idea of the celibate priest who's supposedly closer to God for sacrificing for something that the Bible specifically prohibits. That to me is interesting.
Well, and yes, and I don't understand why they go against scriptures when they're supposed to be supposedly representing God.
Mm-hmm.
Just something is seriously not right.
Why do a mass in Latin for a language that nobody understands? You know, what are you hiding? You know.
Well, thank you. Yeah. 1 Timothy 4:3, by the way.
1 Timothy 4:3.
Mm-hmm. And let me.
And it says.
Actual. Hold on here. I gotta.
That's okay. I got time.
I'm getting.
We got 10 minutes.
I don't
actually, we got a whole hour.
King James.
Yeah. Well, you can do King James, and then I don't know if you have the Hebrew or Greek, but it's always different. This is why I find it so fascinating that King James, you know, why do we take a British monarch's view of Christianity as opposed to the original scriptures? That's something else I find interesting.
Well, let's just start with verse 1.
Okay.
In 1 Timothy chapter 4, it says, "Now the Spirit explicitly says that in later times some will depart from the faith, paying attention to deceitful spirits and the teaching of demons. Through the hypocrisy of liars whose consciences are seared, they forbid marriage and demand abstinence from foods that God created to be received with gratitude by those who believe and know the truth." So let's talk about that, because it's saying that if you forbid to marry and say you can't eat this when God created it to be eaten, but you can't, and just like, you know, the Catholics will say, fish on Friday. And now they've kind of changed that, but you couldn't eat anything else but fish on Friday.
Well, wasn't the church in the fishing business? Wasn't the church in the fishing business, weren't they? I mean, that's where it started.
The Catholic Church has their hands in just about everything, but it's kind of like the mafia.
who happens to be Catholic for the most part, by the way. It's fascinating. Yes, yes, you hit man, you get your last rites. You know, just ask for God's forgiveness. And all those people you killed, it's okay. Right.
Yeah, say a couple Hail Marys. But it says that the Spirit explicitly says that it's talking about the Holy Spirit when it mentions that in later times some will depart from the faith. So just by looking at what they are asking their parishioners to do, are they in the faith or out of the faith? Attention to deceitful spirits and the teachings of demons.
Right.
And hypocrisy and lying, and their consciences are seared. And they forbid marriage and demand abstinence from foods that God created to be received with gratitude. So just those little three things that we've mentioned about, you know, forbidding their priest to marry, that you can't eat certain foods on certain days, that they're, it's teachings of demons and they have departed from the faith. Raising the Pope to the level of God, can we say idol worship?
Yeah. Well, look at all the images that are in the churches. You know,
exactly.
You know, it's one. And look at the finery. I mean, they wear robes of gold woven in and jewels and everything else like that. It's not like they're hurting. You know, and the silver and gold is everywhere in the Catholic Church.
If you want to wear robes of gold, great, do it. But don't say that nobody else can.
Okay.
Don't say
that makes sense.
You have to live in poverty while I live in luxury. God wants you to have nice clothes. Of course he does. But is it okay for you to have nice clothes and then tell somebody else they can't have it?
Mm-hmm. No.
No.
Exactly. I'll just say, no. And we're going to start quoting Wendyisms. Well, so then how come nobody in the Catholic, that's a Wendyism, all right? You know, we have Gregisms and Wendyisms. So why doesn't anybody question this? You know, how long have these people been able to get away with this for so long? Or do they have the guilt of God saying, we have God on our side, and if you question us, you know, you're going straight to hell? I mean,
there is no guilt of God. Guilt doesn't come from God. Guilt is from the pit of hell, and it smells like smoke.
Mm.
Condemnation, guilt, coercion of any kind, this is all earmarks of the enemy, okay? God will convict you by the Holy Spirit saying, hey, check on this because this isn't right. Here's a better way over here. Not God. Or you know what? Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe something just doesn't feel right. That's conviction from the Lord.
Okay.
Guilt is not from God. So, and because God is so quick to forgive when you ask and you sincerely want to turn away from what you've been doing wrong. or what you didn't know was wrong, you know, like you wasn't really sure, but okay, now you know because you're feeling the conviction of the Holy Spirit, turn away from it, you know, and then find out what it is that God does want you to do in place of that. But to go along and say, why do people do this? Why do the Catholic people continue in this? It's called the spirit of religion. Religion is not good. Religion is from the pit of hell. So I want people to say that, you know, memorize it, say it, live it, okay? Religion is from the pit of hell. It has nothing to do with God at all. It has everything to do with man exalting himself into the place of God and telling people what to do, and expecting them to do it. And if they don't, then the guilt, then the wrath, then the shame, then the shunning, then the, you know, the coercion, all that crap from Satan himself comes into play.
Yeah, it's fascinating. There's also the idea that, I mean, this goes back to feudal times, so don't worry about how miserable your life is or how much wealth the church has, because you're going to get your reward in heaven, you know, no matter what. So, but that goes against all of God's teachings that you should have a good life here on earth, and you should have a life that's free, and you should be able to, you know, do all the things you can do and reach your potential. So there's another huge contradiction. You know, the church doesn't seem to be addressing that these days either.
And let me go ahead and put this out there. God loves the Catholic people. He wants them free. He wants them free of the church. He wants them free of all the man-made religion and the rules and the regulations that he never said to do. If you want to be married and have a family, be married and have a family, because it's not just the priests who are forbidden to marry, it's the nuns too. Go look at all the nunneries back in the day, and you'll find, you know, buried dead babies everywhere.
Yeah.
The bones of babies, because you're not going to stop human desire. So, yeah.
Is that Rocky? Is that Rocky back there talking?
Yep. Mike said that they actually tore down an old convent and the walls were full of babies' bones.
Wow. Well, you know, if God didn't want us to, you know, have these wonderful bodies and enjoy them, they wouldn't be created that way. Does that ever come up?
Yes. Within certain confines that are good confines. He's saying, he made marriage to be the ultimate union here on earth. And we have made it something it was never intended to be. And it's God created sex. I mean, it was his idea, people. Okay. So let's kind of get
good
all,
idea,
all,
God.
All the
really appreciate that one.
Yeah. The Puritanism thing, but he's saying, I made this wonderful thing as a benefit of marriage.
Right.
Because marriage is where two people are committed to each other, because marriage itself is the picture of his relationship, God's relationship with the body of Christ, the church, which he calls his bride. So, and that's how much he prizes the body of Christ. He looks at her with such love and longing in his heart to have her be with him, his family, his bride, to be with him forever, and say he wants to adorn her and take care of her and bless her. Just like I want to take care of Michael and give him my very best. He wants to do the same for me. This is a picture of God and the church. So, and if you look at sex, it's the two becoming one in a very intimate way. And that's a picture that we can understand in human form of the intimacy that God wants to have with us spiritually, our heart to heart, you know, become one with his heart. So that's why he wanted sex to be for marriage. It is a benefit of husbands and wives totally and loyally committed to one another, just like he is totally and loyally committed to us. He wants that from us as well. So honor marriage, honor the sexual relationship within marriage, because it's a covenant. It's a picture of the covenant with God. most people have just now made it, oh, sex is just like, you know, okay, you feeling jumpy, you know, go sleep with somebody and take care of the need, just like, you know, animals do, and then, you know, you're good to go until the next urge hits. So that it has degraded it to just a physical thing, when it is a beautiful spiritual picture of the covenant God has made with the church.
You know, it'd be interesting. We should talk more about marriage and what the original intent of marriage, or what it's supposed to be, in terms of what God wanted. Because, I might even try it again. I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, miracles might happen. But it's something very interesting that I think people don't think about, that what marriage has become with, you know, the contract and the divorce and the family courts. I mean, we've done many, many shows that marriage itself, you know, maybe that's part of the problem, is not that people don't want to get married, but they don't want to enter into this thing that has nothing to do with marriage. But people are calling it that. The law is calling it, this is what marriage is, and it's really not. You know, and I've often thought that, I've got time. I got this hour free. There's some things I want to do, but, you know, if you have a few extra minutes. But something that struck me a long time ago is that, you know, life would be so much easier, you know, if you met your partner in high school and you're both virgins and you were each other's only person ever. And, you know, you eliminate all these things that society has, you know, STDs and divorce and abortions, and all these other things happen as a result of not being in a lifetime monogamous marriage. I mean, it's just easier the other way. It didn't work out that way for me. Obviously, you know, I'm divorced. But you look at the, you know, people say, well, God's law is too strict, it's too crazy. But if you actually followed that, you know, so many other things become so much easier, and so many things you don't have to worry about. It's you know, and that's never taught.
That's so true. Because everything God tells us is for our benefit. You know, it's not to say, oh, you can't do this, you can't enjoy that. You can. It's just that do it in the parameters that is a protection and an honoring of what he created it for. People would enter marriage with the knowledge of what marriage really is in God's eyes. Mm-hmm. Number one, most marriages would not happen to the people that they originally chose.
That makes sense.
They aren't following God.
That
when you do marry, with the understanding of what it really means and how holy it really is, when God calls it holy matrimony, he ain't kidding. And people have taken a very holy, beautiful thing and have made it into nothing. And they can throw it away at any time when they just get tired, or, you know, they don't like what somebody's doing or whatever, or it's just not convenient anymore. Then, okay, chuck it. We'll just go with somebody else. And that's not marriage. That is not God's idea of marriage at all. So, that would be a good topic to cover at some point.
Yeah, because I think most of the marriages that are out there that fall apart or end for whatever reason they end were probably not started off, you know, were like fatally flawed to begin with. Something was wrong. And so that kind of makes sense to me, you know, the way these go. So, go ahead.
Scripture says what God has joined together, let no man put asunder, let no man divide, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the thing. Most marriages, God did not put together. Person they chose because they looked good, or they met their needs, or they made their lives convenient in some way. But it was not through thick and thin, hardship and travail until death do us part. That's not in their picture at all. It's, this is great. They make me feel good. And, you know, they think I'm great. And I think they're pretty cool too. So let's go ahead and get married and we'll pay the bill together. That's not marriage. That is not what God put together. So, you know what? That's why most marriages fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. You know, I had those reasons. But,
you're not.
I did
alone.
My part. I think I went in for the right reasons, and, you know, all the things that you said, so it made sense to me. But you need to talk more about this, because this is a huge problem, and also we got a huge problem of just the marriage rate, the single parent rate, everything else, and this is, you know, this is something we could really talk about. And it's just talked about as statistics and figures, but it's not really talked about as causes. It's like we talked earlier with Bill about the One China policy and the fact that they have, you know, a gazillion men who will never be married, you know, from this ridiculous one-child policy, and they killed their baby girls. And so now, you know, again, You know, you're messing with God. You're messing with the natural order of things. And now, they're in for huge problems,
Yeah.
Just because of that. And that's, what are you going to do? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's pick this up. This and you're worried about topics for today.
Yeah.
Silly
thought.
Nope,
one worry, just didn't get one.
Yeah, just let me get started. You know, there's always something that we'll talk about too. So now you got, five topics for next week just based on today.
There you go.
So contact information.
Well, everybody, thank you for listening.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to just thank our listeners around the world for listening. And no matter what time you are listening to this, whether live or by podcast, God loves you, and He really, really wants you and His family. So call out to Him. Get a relationship going and see how your life changes for the better.
It does. Trust me. been on both sides of that coin. Yeah, exactly. It's quite fascinating. And not that I was, consciously rejecting, but I just didn't. And this is something we should talk about too, because a lot of people that think that you just lead a good life and, you do what you think is right and you believe in God, but it's not an active process. It's a very passive process. You're just kind of there. And I think that's where a lot of people are. You've got your atheists and active agnostics and things like that. But I think a lot of people, they're not brought up with the idea that this is a positive interaction that requires, something on your part and something on God's part. And if you do your part, God will do God's part. And then everything changes. It's quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk. We'll talk more.
All right. Be blessed.
Thanks, buddy. You too.
Bye.
All right, so we're going to play a couple things here, and it's now 8:06. I'm going to have my little notes here so I can put my show notes in. So I do show notes after the show. I don't think I've really ever talked about this, but every show, sometime afterwards, I'll type up the notes and make the corrections and change the times from the actual central time to what we do, in terms of what the show time is. And we have a timeline in every show, so when you're listening by podcast, you start the show, it takes about 10 seconds to load. And once it starts playing, this little pink line starts on the far left side at the top. And you can click anywhere in the show based on the time that I give you. So I give you in terms of hours and minutes, for the duration of the show as to where things are. So that's an easy way to do it. We also have our instructions. Well, actually, I shouldn't say instructions, but information at the top. Our main website, other than the one you're listening to, righteousyourlaws.com. That's our legislative site. We also have our account I'm trying to get going here, givesendgo.com/actionradio. That's our fundraising site, givesendgo.com/actionradio. A little bit better than GoFundMe, I think, for a variety of reasons. And so that's what we do here. And so, there's so much that needs doing in terms of our freedom. That's what we're trying to accomplish. And we do things here that aren't done anywhere else on the planet, which makes it kind of special, kind of unique. All right, let me play a couple things for you. Let me just get one started right here. And I'll be back in just a few minutes. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew
are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elva Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Mel, okay, I'm back, and it's just me. The lines are clear. The chat is clear. Everything's pretty much clear. We've got Diane Warner coming in at the top of the next hour. It's 9 o'clock Central Time. It's now 8:11 Central Time. And if you're not listening live, then it doesn't matter. Anyway, let's get back to news of the day, which is my little analysis of what Dick Morris is talking about. And be right back. So there's a little bit of scratchiness in the lines that I'm noticing. Some of the things I'm playing, I'm hoping the podcast comes out okay, because I can hear certain things just sound like they're missing a, you know, like a word here and there. So hopefully that's working out. Anyway, back to Dick Morris. So I started talking about this initially, and it's something that I've been thinking about for a bit, and I've quoted Dick fairly routinely in terms of what he was talking about before the election. And I used to be one of these folks that sort of went along with the idea that we should all vote on election day. And I thought, well, that's kind of crowded. You know, it's inconvenient. That's the first thing. But it seems like the patriotic thing to do. And then he started talking about the fact that the Democrats are banking, you know, hundreds of thousands, you know, millions of votes in some cases, you know, before the first Republican is even put. So all you have to do to script the election, of course, is script election day, and then the Democrats already have their votes in the bank. And so that made a lot of sense to me. And I thought, you know what? He's right. And so that's when I started early voting and started advocating early voting about a month before the November election. And I've always listened to Dick Morris because the fact that he worked for the Clintons, so he knows Democrats. You know, now he's not working for directly Donald Trump, but I'm sure he's advising him because he knows Democrats. You know, he also knows Republicans, and he knows politics better than pretty much anybody I know. And so you only see him a little bits here, a little bits there. He's on Newsmax and some other places. And he has a website, you know, dickmorris.com. Again, I've tried to get him on the show. I think he would love what we do here in terms of citizen legislation. But I think he's one of the smartest people in politics today. And because of that, I sort of thought I'd do a little bit of a show on some Dick Morris stuff. So the first article I have, written January 2nd, so what, it's the 11th, so what, 9 days ago, he says, how did the left acquire such power? And this is something that that everybody needs to understand. He just cuts through the BS and gets right to the point. He says, the cultural Marxist and cancel culture, that's like the subheading of this article. He says, this column is based on the work of social philosopher Oz Guinness, eloquently explained in his book, The Magna Carta of Humanity, Sinai's Revolutionary Faith and the Future of Freedom. I don't know anything about that book. I've never heard of this person, Oz Guinness, but maybe he made the first Guinness. I don't know. It's spelled the same way. So Morris says the left has adopted a new Marxism. The old one, articulated by Karl Marx, was based on economics and the perception of exploitation of workers by the wealthy elite. Well, still some of that around. Oz Guinness explains how leftist professor Herbert Mar-
Marcuse, that's M-A-R-C-U-S-E, and others overhauled Marxist doctrine to focus on cultural dominance as opposed to economic exploitation as its core message. In doing so, it shifted its constituency from the working class, which was never quite comfortable with its dogma, to the cultural elites throughout the world. And of course, we know the results of this, right? They focused on liberation, transformation, and revolutionary change. The 1960s were animated by the Great Refusal, you know, and he says, parentheses, hell no, we won't go, that met the war in Vietnam. This habit of refusal morphed into the current cancel culture that refuses to embrace the core beliefs of Americans about our history, democracy, idealism, race relations, pluralism, economic progress, self-improvement, and sense of justice. Marcuse called for the, quote, long march, echoing Mao, that's Mao Zedong in China, Mao's history, through the cultural and educational institutions of society, and unquote, spreading the doctrine of refusal to accept our social narratives. Then he says, the long march in China is something I haven't quite done in detail, but that's Mao. You know, the long march, the Cultural Revolution, these are all hallmarks of Mao and Mao's China, which is continuing on in Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party, which listens to our show, I'm sure, because China was one of the first international nations to come up. Taiwan, I think, is blocked from listening to us, but China certainly does. And so that's quite fascinating to me. Morris says, this long march was intended to change the way our cultural leaders reacted to our problems. Instead of bolstering a constructive national narrative that underscored our values and institutions while accepting the need for reform, it led to a total rejection of almost everything. It became known as the cancel culture. Critical race theory was one expression of it, but the revolution extended to the realms of climate change, sexuality and mores, gender fluidity and changes, particularly sweeping were the changes in our educational system that sought to undermine our collective narrative about American exceptionalism and enlisted teachers as instruments spreading the new gospel of cultural Marxism. Traditional Marxism seeks to bring about change in the economic society by giving government control of the means of production. In this new Marxism, the goal was to change the culture of our information society by giving the left control of the means of information dissemination and education so that its doctrines and dogma could spread to the entire society. This is critical. I'm going to stop now because there's a lawsuit that I just found out about this morning. It's documented in The Defender, which is the publication of Children's Health Defense Network, which is Robert F. Kennedy, Robert Francis Kennedy Jr.'s publication. And so I'm hoping to get him on the show. I know people that know him. You know, in fact, actually, Judy Mikovits talked about, she calls him Bobby. Well, Bobby said, back we had our world's greatest panel, you know, world's greatest doctors panel, and Judy was on. In fact, Judy's, you know, one of the folks I talked to about this. I want to get on that lawsuit because we have been severely victimized by big tech, censoring everything ever since I came out with the fact that, started calling Dr. Fauci, Dr. Fascist, started saying that the chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine, you know, treat and cure COVID, saying that everything that the government's doing is illegal under the Constitution. You know, all the things that we've said, I mean, I can't tell you how much I've been censored and how much this show went through an immediate decline and suppression and still does. You know, they have 90-day suppressions. I just got another one yesterday. So they're consecutive. They just find an article from 6 months ago. Well, you shouldn't have said that. That was wrong. Our fact checkers have said that what you said was wrong. Well, who knows what I said 6 months ago or what the context was, you know? And I can look at the post. I say, well, that's it? Or then they'll take it out and say, well, the fact checkers have said you can't say this, and there's nothing there. So you don't know what you didn't say. I mean, this is right out of Kafka, right? So this is the whole culture. This is cultural Marxism. This is what Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Google, the search engine, this is what they all practice. It's cultural Marxism. We will tell you the information that you need. And the problem with Google with having one search engine to find anything on Earth is that they've restricted it and they tell you only what you can find. It's like that old joke by who is this? There was a Russian comic. I've forgotten his name. Yakov Smirnoff, right? So name for the vodka, right? Well, obviously, I think it's an assumed name. He says, yeah, well, he has this Russian the banquet. You know, we have this all-you-can-eat festival, right? The Russian all-you-can-eat festival. You get bread, you get water, and then they tell you that's all you can eat. Anyway, so it's the same kind of thing. You know, it's an all-you-can-eat festival, and then they tell you what you can eat. Okay, same kind of thing here. And so, you know, I want to join that lawsuit. In fact, I'd like to take them for as much money as I can, simply because they've censored my show to the point where we don't have what, the hundreds of thousands of listeners we might have, the millions of listeners we might have, the worldwide revolution in citizen legislation that should be going right now, that's been held up for a couple of years because of all the censorship. I know exactly what this is about. I experience it every day. So cancel culture, have I been directly canceled and doxxed and condemned on social media as a revolutionary, you know, or an anti-revolutionary, you know, white supremacist, homophobic, Islamophobic, whatever it is? No, not yet. They're doing it quietly. I never got to the point where it was big enough, you know, for people to know what we actually do here. This is why it's so important that you share the show. Share the shows and share the bills. That's the only way we're going to break through, you know, and people don't do it because, you know, we're not, you know, famous enough that everybody's sharing and doing that. Well, that's your part. You know, share the show, share the bills. Trust me. When people hear the show, when people see the bills that are written, they go, oh, I want to do that. I want to help with that. I want to, you know, get that vaccine bill into the news. I want to get that big tech, you know, anti-censorship bill into the news. I want to send it to my member of Congress or my state legislator. This is the way it happens. It's happening now. It's just not happening fast enough. That's my problem. So you can help. Also, our givesendgo.com/actionradio account. But back to the article. He says, critical race theory was one expression of it, meaning cultural Marxism, but the revolution extended to the realms of climate change, sexuality and mores, gender fluidity, and changes. I read this, but it's so important. I wanted to do it again, particularly sweeping with the changes in our educational system that sought to undermine our collective narrative about American exceptionalism and enlisted teachers as instruments spreading the new gospel of cultural Marxism. This is why you have to get rid of all government schools. You need to abolish the government schools. The only way you're going to end the cultural Marxist indoctrination or any kind of government indoctrination that always went on in government schools is to end the government schools. So start thinking about that. You know, if you think you can change it by changing a member of the school board or changing a policy here or there, the fundamental problem is that governments are not capable of educating. They're only capable of indoctrinating. So no government school is going to be good enough, ever. So there we go. Next one. Traditional Marxism seeks to bring about change in the economic society by giving government cultural control of the means of production. In the new Marxism, and this is the part I wanted to read again, the goal was to change the culture of our information society by giving the left control of the means of information dissemination and education so that its doctrines and dogma could spread through the entire society. And that's exactly what's happening. So we need to fix that. He says large-scale scholarship aid and student lending dramatically expanded the university population, assuring that this cultural message would spread widely, spawning a new generation of professionals who, in turn, carried the message to the media, advertising, high technology, entrepreneurialism, entertainment, and every other field of human knowledge. Yep, we talked about that this morning. Bill and I talked about that. The education, you know, that's why they put everybody in college and make all the colleges liberal. So everybody has the same indoctrination. So everybody talks to each other and goes, yeah, I understand. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, man. Bring it all down. You know, let's control the information. We have to control the information. We can't have false information out there. Well, what if the false information is the truth, and which it is usually, and what the government's putting out there is the false information is that everything that somebody else says other than government is false information. It's the Marxian dialectic. It's the inherent contradiction with what's being said. But the Marxists will never admit that, even though they're expressing their own Marxian dialectic by everything they say. This is where it gets confusing. Back to the article. Google has centralized all human knowledge into one search engine, and that made it possible to attack this choke point and use it to spread a new gospel of counterculture and woke ideology. This is what I was mentioning earlier, and this is where I got it from. I'll say it again. Google has centralized all human knowledge into one search engine, and that made it possible to attack this choke point and use it to spread a new gospel of counterculture and woke ideology. This is why my big tech bill says that if Google touches the arrangement of any search beyond the actual number of raw hits, they can be sued. They lose their liability immunity from lawsuit. This is why that section was so critical, simply because Google has centralized all human knowledge into one search engine. This is why it's so important. And what's fascinating is that I didn't realize this, that I thought the internet, the beauty of the internet was that anything could be put on it. But the danger of the internet is that anything can also be taken off it, you know, so you don't have to burn all the books. See, when the books are out there, the knowledge is out there and everybody that buys the book, You know, the government can't get rid of all of them. They try, but they can't get rid of all. But with the internet, you can scrub articles. You can scrub every single article off everybody's computer simply by breaking the link so that you can't get to it again. And I have a bunch of articles from early COVID, you know, talking about how COVID was no danger, how we had cures. We had hydroxychloroquine, we had chloroquine, later ivermectin. You know, we had early treatments. We had, you know, vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, and zithromycin, you know, the Zelenko protocol. We had all that knowledge up front, and then it had to be demonized, had to be gotten rid of so they could push the fear, and that the only cure was the COVID jab. And of course, we know what's happening with that now, but that's the control of information. The whole of COVID was done by the control of information, because they controlled the information that I had, that I found very early on. I did a little bit of research one day and found out how viruses kill viruses, how drugs kill viruses, how viruses and drugs kill viruses, how viruses and drugs can stop the replication of other viruses, and all these different things that I found out in like 3 hours. You know, and I did a whole bunch of shows based on that. Well, you know, I think that knowledge is still out there, but you have to ask the right question. Yeah, haven't you noticed, you know, especially if you're a conservative, patriot, independent, libertarian, you know, when you do a search on Google, I use DuckDuckGo, but it's almost the same thing. When you ever do an internet search, you know, and I've tried the conservative sites and the, you know, some of the, I've got like four or five different search engines, and they all have the leftist articles first. It's always MSN, CNN, you know, Washington Post, New York Times. And then, you know, somewhere on the third page, you get to some of the other sources, you know, the sources that actually have something meaningful to say to me, Breitbart, you know, what's the other one, Epoch Times, National File, you know, different sources like that, that actually, you know, are challenging things. And then, of course, the international sources. And that's why we have an international news group. But it's quite fascinating to me how channeled the information is and how easy it is to take stuff off so that you never see it. Of course, if it's never there, you don't know what was. There's no way to trace the history. I have articles that, and fortunately, I have a good memory. But there are articles that said that where this Japanese pharmaceutical high executive who used to work for, I think, the FDA, and, you know, and before that was in Congress, you know, the typical revolving door, gave briefings to both the Democrats and the Republicans separately for some reason. But they both got a briefing that everybody's going to be exposed to COVID in a very short time. Everybody. Well, given that knowledge, there's no point in doing masks. There's no point in locking down. There's no point in doing any of the things they did, because everybody was going to be exposed anyway. So the best thing to do is build up everybody's immunity, because you don't have time to make a vaccine. You don't have 10 years. The virus is already here. And we already had the treatments and cures. So the logical thing to have done was to tell everybody about ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, vitamin D3, vitamin C, and then zinc, which kills the actual DNA part of the virus, hydroxychloroquine, which opens up the virus, the protein wall, and it takes care of it. So if the government was actually interested in helping people, they would have put all that information out there. It wouldn't have been scrubbed from the internet, but they weren't interested in that. They were interested in pushing a vaccine so that the government, pharmaceutical, big tech, fascist relationship, world government, UN, you know, Davos, World Economic Forum, so all those folks could control you. So by controlling the information, they controlled your fear by increasing it, you know, and they controlled the information, and they controlled your fear by taking away the truth. That you had nothing to fear. We already had the cures. We already had the treatments. It was all out there. I've been broadcasting it since February of 2020, when I first knew that there was a problem. We had Bill Gertz on the show. In fact, I just did I just sent out a big email to try and get on this lawsuit, you know. And I remember what I wrote. February 25th, Bill Gertz, the foreign correspondent for the Washington Times, February 25th of 2020, told us that the Wuhan lab was the source of this, and that it was most likely a bioweapon. February 27th, I wrote a bill, you know, to Congress that they could only spend half the money on vaccines. The other half had to be spent on only up to half on vaccines. The other half or more had to be spent on early treatments. You know, then I remember Peter Navarro. He had the 60 million hydroxychloroquine tablets ready to go to stop COVID in 48 hours, 72 hours, the time it takes to read a bill now. Right. So all that stuff was out there. So but the information was controlled and you never heard this stuff. You know, and I brought all this stuff out. March 2nd, declared on the show that chloroquine cures COVID, that there is no pandemic, that you don't have to worry about it. This is all taken care of. You don't need a vaccine. You don't need some experimental drug therapy that nobody knows what's in it. And I knew then that there was a problem because nobody knew what was in it. They hadn't even developed it yet. So why would you take an experiment that's unproven, that doesn't have a 10-year track record? Well, that's just stupid. So anybody that took a COVID shot, you know, who knew that this was brand new was crazy. Why would you do that? You never do that. You never take some experimental medical thing unless you've consented to the experiment, which people didn't, but they took it anyway. You know, I mean, that's just common sense. So your common sense was removed. Your information was taken away. Your fear was increased. And the cures that were obviously there were denied to you. Well, that's why we had a problem. And this is all comes about because of cultural Marxism. That's what I'm bringing it back to. So let me go back and just repeat this one sentence, and then I'll give you the rest of the article. It says, Google has centralized all human knowledge into one search engine, and that made it possible to attack this choke point and use it to spread a new gospel of counterculture and woke ideology. Then young billionaires got into the act, having themselves been nursed by these cultural Marxist ideas using their vast financial resources. That would be Zuckerberg and, you know, the election fraud, for example, right? These vast financial resources unheard of even in the industrial gilded age to control the free flow of information, the equivalent of the means of production for cultural Marxism. So let's say that again. Controlling the free flow of information is the equivalent of controlling the means of production. And that's the difference between economic Marxism and cultural Marxism. So let me talk about the means of production and the free flow of information. One of the things in my lawsuit, and I propose my own lawsuit, anybody wants it, I'll post it again on my page and on the Action Radio group and in the Action Radio Legal Project on Facebook. You can still find them. They're not totally blocking it out. They just don't tell you about it. It doesn't appear in your news feed, so you don't see it. But I had several proposals. In fact, maybe I should go over that tomorrow. That might be I got time. It's Thursday. Nobody's scared. Well, no, I have two guests tomorrow. I'm wrong. I'll go over it sometime. But my lawsuit was talking about all kinds of things: public accommodation, censorship, ideology. You know, if ideology is being censored, information is being censored. They have to let this stuff go because they're open to the public. The idea that these social media companies are private companies and they can do what they want is absurd. Well, that's like saying a restaurant can stop black people coming into the restaurant because they're a private company. Well, we know that's not true because of the Civil Rights Act, public accommodation. So these social media companies have public accommodation. They're open to the public. The transportation highway that was blocked from travel by black residents in the segregated South, you know, is exactly the same as the information highway that's blocked by conservatives and people ideologically opposed to cultural Marxism. It's the same problem. It's the same legal theory. So to open up, and this is what my lawsuit is based on, that the information superhighway is being blocked, that public accommodation is being blocked by social media and by Google blocking information, you know, channeling certain things in, denying you the information and using your ideology against you. The same that the new segregation is ideology. The new segregation is free speech. The new segregation is all these horrible things that big tech and the government and big government and big pharma are doing to push a dangerous jab onto you. And the results are people are dropping dead or nearly dead in football games in front of millions of people. And that's only one person. Look at all the people that have died. You know, and you can't question it? I question it every day. But there's a price to be paid. And the price to be paid is I get censored. I don't care. I'm going to say it anyway because it needs to be said. You know, is doing the right thing has its own reward. It's just, it'd be nice if a lot more people heard. And that's your job. Share the show, share the bills. Back to the article. Let me read this last little bit again. That to control the flow of information, the equivalent of the means of production is cultural Marxism. So there's no difference between controlling the means of production, which would be, you know, how people produce and engage in commerce and acquire property. That's what controlling the means of production is. Those who control the means of production control the results of the production, control the products of production, the goods and services. That's why it's so critical that the government not control the means of production. In the same way, it's just as critical that private companies and government working together do not control the means of production of information. In other words, us. And our access to the information produced by everybody else. The free flow of information is critical to freedom. You cannot have a free society unless you have a free flow of information. I mean, it's a constitutional right. I would say that the right of free speech implies the right to listen, and implies the right to read, implies the right to be to hear and to find that information. So you can't have free speech without free access to that speech. So I would argue the First Amendment not only implies the right of the speaker to speak freely, but the right of the listener to get the information that the speaker is speaking. Because you can't have one without the other. You don't have communication unless there's a speaker and a receiver. That's communication. So I would say the First Amendment guarantees your right to get information in the same way that it guarantees your right to say it. Now, you're still responsible for what's said, and if you say it, and you're still responsible for the information you get and what you do with it, I mean, that doesn't change. But that's statutory law. But the right of free speech implies that speech is two-way. And, you know, I don't think I've ever heard this anybody else say this. But the First Amendment, you know, let's mark the tape here, 835. Yeah. But the First Amendment to the Constitution, you know, let me read it here, just to be sure we're doing this all correctly. Oh, the things that the tangents I go on. I mean, this is what happens when you brainstorm your way through a show, that you never know where I'm going to go. I just start the show and see what happens. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or, and here's the part for today, abridging the freedom of speech. So if Congress can't make a law abridging the freedom of speech, and the 14th Amendment extends the Bill of Rights to the states and local governments, then no government can make a law abridging the freedom of speech. Well, it doesn't say the freedom of speech. It doesn't say the freedom of the speaker. It doesn't say the freedom of the listener. It says freedom of speech. Well, what is speech unless you have access to that speech? So I would contend that the First Amendment not only guarantees the right of the speaker to speak, it guarantees the right of the receiver to get the message. Think about that. Back to the article. The organizations and causes fathered by this movement, in other words, cultural Marxism, are constantly changing. They are a kind of beehive of causes from Black Lives Matter to the Green Revolution to racial equality preferences for minorities to reproductive freedom to trans studies and every imaginable form of movement. But they all had the common denominator of being powered by the Marxist cultural revolution and financial power of its billionaires. Let me say that again. But they all had the common denominator of being powered by the Marxist cultural revolution and financial power of its billionaires. So, continuing with the article, the cultural Marxists extended their power through the malignant growth of slanted information, one-sided narratives, false facts, and distorted perceptions. It particularly focuses on exploiting the envies of various racial, economic, social, and intellectual cultures against those they felt have held them in domination. So diverse was this penetration and so extensive that it became impossible to root out, just as the cultural Marxists intended when they made their, quote, long march through the cultural institutions and gatekeepers. Their central goal is hegemony, parentheses, power, over all society. In their construct, there is no objective reality, no right or wrong, but only the power of cultural hegemony imposing a worldview on the people. This moral relativism deliberately leaves no room for God or religion, and the lust for hegemony causes a strong anti-religious bias that infuses the entire movement, just as it did in revolutionary France in 1789. That, of course, they had their French Revolution. We had our War for Independence. Two totally different things. We did not have an American Revolution. We had a War for Independence. And that War for Independence was fought over the Declaration of Independence and then, of course, later maintained with the Constitution. Okay? It was not a revolution, because what the founders brought was things that have already been discussed. That it was nothing. There's nothing. And the irony of the American Revolution is that it wasn't revolutionary. The principles that were brought here and expanded, what was revolutionary was that those principles were expanded to everybody. Okay, no, not just white men with property. I've never found that in any founding document. There's nothing if you can find it, show me where it says in a founding document that freedom only means white men with property. It's not there. Yet the myth continues. The other myth is that there's a separation of church and state, that nothing the church does, that nothing in the state, anything to do with government, can have any reference to the church or religion. Bunch of nonsense too. But that's control of the information. Okay, this has been going on since our country began. But France did have a revolution. I mean, they revolted against the monarchy. They revolted against every principle they can think of. They guillotined everybody who didn't believe in what they believed. You know, there are those that would love to have a French Revolution here for the same reason. Gulags, guillotines, you know, because we believe we're going to kill you. I mean, that was the French Revolution. Our war for independence was we wanted to throw off the monarchy of England that was dominated every aspect of our lives, much like our federal government wants to do today, and to a large extent does. So what's the difference? Well, the difference is it's domestic as opposed to foreign. But all these people in Congress, this is what the Brunson lawsuit was all about. We'll talk about this, I'm sure, with Diane in a little bit. The Brunson lawsuit was specifically about the idea that people in Congress have to obey an oath of office. When they swear to uphold the Constitution, they better damn well do it, or, you know, we're going to go after them for it. Now, I never thought that lawsuit would go anywhere, even though I was fascinated to talk to Loy Brunton, for the simple reason that the Supreme Court, knowing the Supreme Court as I have and observed them for decades, they never do anything, you know, unless they find some precedent or some part of the Constitution, or they make up something based in some part of the Constitution. But there's no adherence to the oath. There's nothing required once you take the oath of office, to actually, you know, do what you said you were going to do when you took that oath of office. In other words, defend the country, you know, from enemies, foreign and domestic. There's no requirement. So the Supreme Court make up other requirements, but they won't make up a requirement there. They'll make one up for gay marriage and, for abortion and things like that, and some of the other penumbras of rights that they create, but they won't make up one, you know, for this, which is kind of interesting. But that's why we have Title 18, Section 241, Conspiracy Against Rights. Any two or more people that conspire to oppress the exercise or enjoyment of any constitutional right are subject to jail and big fines. Well, use it. Don't go to the Supreme Court. Use that law. Should be done at the state level. You know, a state should be arresting a lot of federal officials and members of Congress and recalling them, too, as Pianki talks about. All right. Let me go back to the article. We're almost done. In fact, I'm almost done with the hour, too. I was going to do like 3 or 4 articles this hour, but you know what happens. I get to talking, but of course, that's part of the show, too. So it says the central goal, let me just backtrack a bit so we get caught up. The central goal is hegemony over all society. In their construct, there is no objective reality, no right or wrong, but only the power of cultural hegemony imposing a worldview on the people. This moral relativism deliberately leaves no room for God or religion. Notice those are a big part of my show, right? And the lust for hegemony causes a strong anti-religious bias that influences the entire movement, just as it did in revolutionary France in 1789. Article continues, in this drive for cultural hegemony, the left seeks to change the language. Notice how I play with language all the time. There's a reason it's the gelding old party. It's the reason I don't say rhino, I say transgender Democrat, because language is everything. If I can frame the debate in my own terminology, I win. That's why I do it. That's why when Illinois banned freedom rifles, so they destroyed your freedom because they took away your freedom rifles. Well, that's a totally different argument than banning assault weapons, because language means everything. It just does. Use language, change the words, change the meanings. Why do you think I call him Dr. Fascist? You know, genocidal, psychopathic, avaricious, narcissistic, pathologically lying, vaccine drug pusher. I use those words because it conjures up an image, I think a highly accurate one, of Dr. Fascist. If everybody called him Dr. Fascist, he'd never be on TV again. Well, who wants to go on TV as known as Dr. Fascist? See, but you didn't use the words. You didn't use those words. Some people did. Dr. Pry did. People have called the show have. I've heard them. I've heard people talk about the gelding old party. I'll tell you one of the funniest things I heard. This is on Lindell TV. They're all now talking about the DC gulag. Well, where'd you first hear that term? I don't know. Me? You know, a year and a half ago? As soon as those folks were locked up from January 6th, I said they were political prisoners, and they put in a DC gulag. Now, I'm sure I wasn't the only one. I'm the only one I know, though. You know, now everybody's saying it, the DC gulag. Well, that means something to people. That implies a communist jail that has nothing to do with rights or justice or due process. Why do you think I used it, you know, shortly after January 6th, 2021? Because it has an effect. It has a meaning. Language, if you can use language and learn how to use language and come up with new terms, you can do anything. And we do here, too, except for the fact that we're censored. If all the terms that I came up with were in common usage, if a Republican establishment were called transgender Democrats, that would bring about a change. You know, if everybody started referring to the GOP as the gelding old party, that would bring about a change. If everybody started saying freedom rifles instead of assault weapons, that, too, would bring about a change. If you said, instead of using the term fossil fuel, you use the term organic fuel, as I do, that would bring about a change. If you talk about carbon dioxide as part of the carbon cycle and essential for plant life, that would bring about a change. Anytime you change the language, you bring about a change. But you have to start changing the language and you have to start using it. Don't use their words. Don't use, you know, transgender. You know, say transvestite, say crossdresser, say gender dysphoria, say mental health issues, say anything you want, but don't say transgender because there is no such thing. You cannot be transgender. You are a gender. You are born with one. It's not even gender. It's sex. You're born with a sex. God gives you a sex based on the chromosomes, the XX or the XY, and that's it. That doesn't change. So you can't possibly be trans. So stop using the word transgender. There is no such word. It doesn't apply. It doesn't make any sense. There is no such person. You are either, you know, you're either under chemical or surgical mutilation or abuse or not. You know, it's like the vaccine. You didn't receive a vaccine. you're vaccine injured, or you're jab injured, or your messenger RNA changed, but you certainly didn't get a vaccine to prevent a disease, because it doesn't. It's certainly not safe and effective, so don't say it. Say it's dangerous and injurious. Injurious. Language. Language. I can't tell you how important language is. Okay, let's get back to the article. Okay, so it says, and since there is no objective, oh man, I think I went a little bit too far. Let me go back just a little bit here. Oh, I read that. Here we go. And since there is no, so language is everything, you know, talking about, let me just read this last little bit here. It wants to ban gender pronouns, exchange equality for equity. Oh, here we go. No, actually, no, I did. I went a little bit too far the other way. Oh, let's start here. There is the central goal, their central goal, this is from the article, is hegemony, power over all society. In construct, there's no objective reality, no right or wrong, but only the power of cultural hegemony imposing a worldview on the people. This, or I remember that part. In this drive for cultural hegemony, the left seeks to change the language. It wants to ban gender pronouns. There's only two personal pronouns, I and me. You know, the other pronouns, the second person are he and she. The third person, I forgot what it is, you know, talking about yourself in the, you know, as if you're somebody else. Anyway, those are your pronouns. You know, I and me, he, she, and they, and we. Those are personal pronouns. That's it. You know, if you're talking about I and me, those are your personal pronouns. Those are the only two personal pronouns. So get your language right. Back to this article. It says it wants to ban, it, meaning cultural Marxism, wants to ban gender pronouns, exchange equality for equity, which is giving preferences to minorities, and redefine freedom of speech to mean echoing and repeating a common cultural script. Yeah. If the freedom of speech means that you have to repeat what someone else has said, there's no freedom in there. And again, I still contend that freedom of speech implies the freedom to get the message. Otherwise, there's no freedom of speech. We should talk about that. I'm talking about Jonathan one day. Back to the article. And since there is no objective truth, right and wrong are determined by a global hegemony or tyranny. Everything, every human relationship, every institution of society is a manifestation of the power of one over the others. Yeah. Whites exploit blacks. Men exploit women. The old exploit the young. The rich exploit the poor. Europeans exploit indigenous people. Straights exploit gays. Bosses exploit workers. Men exploit pregnant women, and so forth. And for each victimized cohort, there is an organization and a movement dedicated to its liberation, creating a mosaic of grievance to power political change. Let me say that again. For each victimized cohort, there is an organization and a movement dedicated to its liberation, creating a mosaic of grievance to power political change. That's exactly what's going on. The victimization industry, the separation of one from the other, that everybody's either an exploiter or a victim, is how they're getting political change. There's a huge difference between equality and equity. Okay, let me see if I can explain it. Equality is where we all have the same rights, we all have the same capability, we all have the same potential, and it's up to you to do something. There's no restrictions on you as a person. You can live up to your potential. That's equality, all right? That's also freedom. Equity means everybody gets the same thing. Equity means that no matter how hard you work, you know, you get the same wage as somebody who does nothing. That's equity, because everybody gets the same thing. So you see the difference? The difference between equality and equity is night and day. They're polar opposites. You know, you can't have equity if we have equality. You simply can't, because equity implies taking from those that have more and giving to those that have less, from each according to his means to each according to their needs. That's Marxism. You know, that's what Marx said. Whatever your means are, whatever you've accumulated as private property through your hard work, the fruits of your labors, doesn't matter, because if somebody else needs it, they get it. And that's what Ayn Rand was so railing about, or Ayn Rand, you know, in Atlas Shrugged, which I'm happy to watch couple of movies on, which are rather good, actually. All right. Political power, back to the article. Political power stems from harnessing the envy and resentment of the victims, welding them into a mosaic of change agents and a revolutionary army of cultural Marxists. Let me say that again. Political power stems from harnessing envy and resentment of the victims, welding them into a mosaic of change agents and a revolutionary army of cultural Marxists. Mao, as in Mao Zedong, Mao famously said that political power flowed from the barrel of a gun. But to cultural Marxists, it flows from a dogma of ideas imposed through all of society's sources of information. And I would add restricting those that they disagree with. In other words, Action Radio. Back to the article. A social media platform can replace Mao's entire army in creating a hegemony of its ideas. See, they don't need the foot soldiers. They don't need to throw everybody in a gulag. You're in a mental gulag. Everybody's in a mental gulag if you go along with big tech. If your only sources of information are what they tell you the sources of information are, you're a mental prisoner. They don't have to lock anybody up. They've already done it. They've locked up the information. What information you don't have access to is what makes you a prisoner. If you think that there was an insurrection in the Capitol January 6th, if you think that Biden is the president, if you think that there's a Biden administration, if you think that any number of different things out there, you know, if you think that Black Lives Matter cares about black lives, you know, all these different things. If you think the vaccine is safe and effective, if you think it's a vaccine, none of that is true. None of it. If you think any of those things, you're in a mental prison. You need to open your mind. You need to escape. You need to get out of jail free card. Action Radio, alternative media, different media sources. Look for the information. They can't completely stop it, but they can make you fear it. And I think this is the point. They know they cannot completely suppress Action Radio because I have listeners more and more all the time. Nowhere near as much as I want, nor as much as we deserve, nor is it growing as fast as it would without the restrictions. But they can't completely stop us. Fortunately, Blog Talk Radio allows me to say what I say here, the truth. You know, and because they don't restrict that, it's out there. But what they have restricted is your, but you don't, you, meaning the listeners, don't share the show like you could. I know you don't. If you don't share every show every day, you're not sharing as much as you can. If you're not reading the bills, and I'm not trying to require everybody to do this work. I do it because I love it. Because I love freedom. And this is the way I intend to bring as much freedom to as many people as possible worldwide. But if you just do a little bit, open your mind up a bit, get some of your thought back, get out of the prison, you know, start putting your foot out the door and then put your other foot out the door and then your whole body out the door and then become completely free to be open to information. It's the Matrix. The Matrix is one of the greatest films ever. The Matrix, the red pill and the blue pill. Are you a blue pill person? Do you believe the fantasy? Oh, the vaccine is safe and effective. If I pay my mortgage and have a family and have kids and go to work at a job I hate, you know, a marriage I can't stand, and then I'm a good person. I'm normal. Okay. If you believe that kind of nonsense, if you believe that everything is just sports and entertainment and fantasy and all these things that are supplied for you, then you're a blue pill person. If you're like me and a bunch of other folks, if you're like me, you probably listen to the show. Then you're a red pill person. That you see the BS, you see the things that are going on. You change the language to fit yourself. You come up with brand new terms, like organic fuels instead of fossil fuels. You're creative. You're not bound by the restrictions of society. You're not bound by the fear because you don't have any fear. Okay, one of the freest things you can do is to go through life without fear. Well, am I scared of things? Sure. You know, I mean, I don't want to walk under a ladder with a bunch of paint on it that might fall on my head, and that's just common sense. But there are fears too. There's all kinds of fears, you know, of things that might happen. You know, if I get another hurricane that comes through here, you know, will it carry me with it? You know, that's, or if I get crushed by any number of things, that's a fear. Okay. But I can deal with that fear by not being here. Okay. So your mental fear is the hardest one because you can't escape your brain. You can't escape your feelings and you can't escape your emotions. So if you're going to cure yourself of this fear, you have to do it yourself. Okay. And you're the only one that can do it. See, that's the flip side of this. The only person that can cure your fear, that can get you out of cultural Marxism, is you. You're the one that has to take the chance. You're the one that has to challenge your thoughts. You're the one that has to defy people. You know, when you see somebody with a mask, just kind of, you know, snicker to yourself, go, what are you wearing that for? You know, and I used to do that. You know, when you're not wearing a mask. You know, they say, where's your mask? I said, what mask? Why don't you have a mask? I don't have a mask. Why would I need a mask? Why are you wearing one of those things anyway? You know it doesn't work. And I say this to people, right? Right in the grocery store. Anybody who saw me in the grocery store during the mask era knows that's exactly what I did. I said, why are you wearing that? Isn't that kind of stupid? Well, I need this to... No, it doesn't. I said, you take the size of a virus and the size of the spaces in that piece of cotton you're wearing over your face. And I said, you know, that virus just runs right through. You know, try breathing out. See how easy it is? Oh, yeah. Okay, well, you know, you just breathe out. And when you breathe in, everything goes out and come back in. I said, besides, that's a petri dish in front of your face. That's not a mask. What? Yeah, you're growing your own bacteria in that mask. And then you're breathing it back in. Interesting thought. I can't tell you how many people took their masks off. They probably put them back on when they left me. But by the time when they were with me, they're like, I didn't know that. So of course you didn't know that. You could have if you thought about it. Why would you breathe warm air, you know, into a petri dish in front of your face and then breathe it back into your system and keep that mask on for hours and hours? Inherently, that makes no sense. So anybody could have taken their mask off simply because it made no sense to wear one, especially for any length of time. Well, you have to wear it to protect other people. Oh, okay. Well, they can wear a mask too. Let them wear a mask if they think it's protecting them. I mean, the logic of this is fascinating. The crazy, you want to talk about a gulag, mental prison? I'll tell you, the biggest mental prison are those people that were wearing a mask in a car by themselves with their windows rolled up. Okay. That is insanity. That and we used to joke around, you know, when the mask thing first came out. Yeah, I bet you we're going to see people wearing it in their car by themselves. And sure enough, they started doing it. And I just point and laugh. I'd be sitting in a traffic light looking across from somebody, you know, wearing a mask in a closed-up car, and I'd just laugh. I'd point and laugh at them. Sometimes they roll down the window. What are you doing? I said, well, why are you wearing a mask, you know, in a car that's locked up and you're the only one there? Well, I'm doing my part. Like, okay. Welcome to the gulag. So your car is now a gulag. Your brain is a gulag. Your soul, your mind, your heart, your emotions, everything about you is in a gulag unless you're willing to be free. So let yourself out. It's kind of a nice world out here. Are there things to be afraid of? Sure. But you don't have to be afraid of fear. You don't have fear. You're not inherently afraid all the time. That's the difference. All right. A little bit left of this article. Mao famously said that political power flowed from the barrel of a gun. But to cultural Marxists, it flows from a dogma of ideas imposed through all of society's sources of information, which unfortunately doesn't include Action Radio anywhere near as much as it should. It says a social media platform can replace Mao's entire army in creating a hegemony of its ideas. But a singular feature of this revolutionary movement is that it can never succeed. The grievance remains forever, festering and empowering change agents. No reform legislation, no civil rights law, no degree of social acceptance, no alteration in vocabulary can ever remedy the grievance. The need for the social movement is permanent, and thus, so is its political power. Yeah, let me try that one again. The singular feature of this revolutionary movement is that it can never succeed. All right, so I'm kind of curious about that. So I'm going to have to read that. So is he for it or against it? I'm sort of missing something. It says, but a singular feature of this revolutionary movement is that it can never succeed. The grievance remains forever, festering and empowering change agents. No reform legislation, no civil rights law, no degree of social acceptance, no alteration in vocabulary can ever remedy the grievance. The need for the social movement is permanent, and thus so is its political power. Okay, I know what he's saying. I figured it out. All right. So what he's saying is that there's never enough. There's never enough equity. There's never enough, you know, reparations. There's never enough social justice. There's never enough money. There's never enough transfer of wealth. There's never enough guilt. There's never enough control. There's never enough. You know, you look at any movement from LGBTQ to Black Lives Matter to Antifa to transgender, there's never enough. No matter what you want, gun control, there's never enough. Even if every gun in this country were confiscated, every bullet in this country was confiscated, it wouldn't be enough. They'd want more. They'd want to restrict where you can go, what you can do, whether you can have a knife or not, whether you can have a steak knife, whether you can have a metal knife. It would never stop. That's what this is all about. Let me go back to the article. We're almost done. Diane's on the line. She's in fact, there's quite a bit more to this article. I'm going to have to pick this up tomorrow. And it says, so it says, I'll end with the problems. Then we'll get the cures probably tomorrow. All right, here we go. He says, in achieving, this is back to Dick Morris, in achieving greater racial justice, for example, we have banned slavery, integrated schools, elected blacks in direct proportion to their population, chosen an African-American president, assured that minorities are heavily represented in the top ranks of politics, economics, media, and entertainment. But the envy festers, and each new victory simply whets the appetite for more. A temporary movement meant to remedy a specific injustice becomes a permanent political force once the evil that impelled it is vanquished. Civil rights is a perfect example. Civil Rights Act stops segregation. Okay, where are we now? Affirmative action and everything else. There's never enough. That's my contention. I'll add that. There's never enough. The left will never be satisfied. There's never enough Marxism. There's never enough property to be taken from you. There's never enough rights that you can be deprived of. It doesn't matter what it is, climate change, you name it. There's never enough until you are naked, eating bugs, and living in a gulag. Never enough. And even then, there won't be enough. Then your behavior will somehow be wrong, and you still need to be reeducated and corrected. Back to the article. While democratic society moves from a zero-sum analyst of power, I win, you lose, to a more enlightened non-zero view, I win, we both win. If I lose, we both lose too. The cultural Marxists will have none of it. Power is competition with winners and losers, and all losers must fight together to upend the social order so they can win. By the way, there's no winners in cultural Marxism because everybody's always a loser, which means they always want more. Cultural Marxism has no room for the individual. It doesn't matter who gets the Nobel Prize or the gold medal or who becomes president or who gets what financial reward. The cohort must move up or down together with its unity powered by a common sense of victimization and a resulting tribal demand for unity. A sprinkling of success stories doesn't matter. The next section, how to counter cultural Marxism. Guess what? I'm going to pick that up tomorrow. Now, I don't have a theme for Diane yet. It's in the works. I will get to it, but I've been doing others in the meantime. Whew. Diane, you listen to the last hour? I'm kind of on a roll here.
No, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Just got on.
I should stop asking that question because everybody has like a life outside of Action Radio. And you know, everybody calls in and goes, you know, but it's fascinating, especially if you get to listen to other reports. There is some kind of a consistency here to this. Well, I don't have a theme for you, so let me just play this. We'll give you like a, here we go. And now, the Election Integrity Report and the Medical Freedom Report with Diane Warner.
Good morning. I like that.
Yeah. So I can make up a theme on the spot. Yeah. We need to wake you up. Yes. Being awake is sort of like a prerequisite for doing the show. Although there have been days when I shouldn't confess this. Seriously, back in the time when I was working crazy full time and doing the show full time, and I only had 2 hours for the show, I almost fell asleep a few times at the microphone. I don't know what would have happened, but I was so exhausted. Yeah. I was so beaten down.
You start snoring.
Well, actually, hosts have done that because, you know, when they have these ridiculous schedules, you know, it can happen. Fortunately, I'm in much better shape now, and the show's doing much better, so I'm not in that position. But there were times. Yeah, or yeah. Hey, you know, well, maybe now if I have really boring guests, it can happen sometime too. But you've been busy. Anything you had the inauguration last week?
Crazy.
Let's pick it up from the inauguration and just kind of tell me your story. Tell me what's going on.
Well, I kind of wanted to start with the Brunson case because
I'm open.
They we were very sad to see, and I know it was a really long shot to be able to win this case. But I did text Loy, and I said, hey, if you want to call in today and give us an update, then we'll screen his time at 8 to 9. So that's why I just wanted to pop that on at the beginning, because watch for his call in case he does.
Loy, come back, Loy. Come back to Action Radio.
Well,
it's literally a shout-out.
You know, if he wants to start some – yeah. I also asked if he wanted to start some legislation with us, too. So,
wonderful.
Sad to see that.
Yeah.
Well, I said that sad to see that case that didn't go. But then on the other hand, if it did happen and then Trump got back in, it'd be too soon. I don't want Trump to come back to office after January 20th.
Well, no, wait a minute. There's a way. There's a way, though. No, 22nd Amendment. Let me quote you my theory. And he can't come back January 20th, but he can come back January 21st. Oh, let me get the right one here.
Yes. Not until January 20th. That's what I'm saying.
Well, on the 21st. He has to serve less than 2 years in order to be able to run again.
Exactly.
In 2024.
That's why I don't want him to come back until after the 20th.
Okay, so you're on board with
which
me.
Which is the 21st.
The same thing.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Okay,
exactly.
Good. So is that because of what I talked about on the show, or you came about this through independent knowledge? Where did you get this from? I'm curious. Okay.
I knew it already, right. But and then you confirmed it with me. So
okay.
I thought, you know, it's too early, but I don't know if they do an appeal on this case. I it's still a long shot.
I didn't think it was ever going to go, quite frankly. I mean, I admired them for bringing the lawsuit. It brought a tremendous awareness, the fact that there is no allegiance to the oath of office, that there is no consequence for not doing it. Now, we still have Title 18, Article Section 241, you know, which is conspiracy against rights. this is what I think they should. And I talked about this with Lloyd. This is where they can go after these people. Say, look, and there's no exception for government. If any two people conspire to oppress the, and I've got it from memory, right, to oppress the exercise or enjoyment of any constitutional right, that constitutes a felony, and those folks can be thrown in jail and fined a whole bunch of money. So I would take the Illinois legislature and Governor Pritzker right now for another bogus, quote, assault weapon ban, because that is blatantly unconstitutional, because all statutory laws that touch your rights. Yeah, go ahead.
No one's able to get the point. My son lives in Illinois. Uh-huh. Yeah, my son lives in Illinois. He was really mad about that law. He went out yesterday and bought some stuff before the law.
Yeah, a lot of people do, but he shouldn't have to do that. That's coercing commerce based on a threatened duress. No, but the thing is, what they really should be doing, in fact, if he wants to call in sometime, it'd be great to hear from him. What he really should be doing is saying, look, all these people need to be arrested for oppressing the exercise and enjoyment of our Second Amendment rights. They can't do that.
I'm just trying to talk him into moving here. I just want him out of Illinois. So
that makes sense.
Hopefully he will. Yeah. Want him closer.
Okay.
So that's
hey, son of Diane, get your butt down here. We need you down here. Does he listen?
He won't be calling in. He works during this time.
What, does he? Hopefully he catches the podcast. Does he listen to Mom? Come on, tell me. Is he proud of you?
Probably not.
He doesn't listen to you? He's not a liberal, is he?
It.
Okay. Do we want to hear?
No.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we want to hear because you're your son, but
absolutely.
I mean, we may have to, culturally un-Marxism him. Listen to the last hour. That'll be explained. Yeah, okay, fine.
No, he's a constitutionalist, for sure.
Okay, good. Well, then let's get these Illinois folks.
He's a good guy.
But they should be pushing for these people to be arrested on the grounds of suppressing our constitutional rights. See, this is the problem. See, at least, and I'll just spend a minute on this one, we'll get back to Brunson. But the problem is that there's no penalty for bringing about obviously unconstitutional laws and passing them. They go, well, we'll go take it back to the Supreme Court. We'll file a lawsuit. We'll take years and years. And people lose their rights. Every time that one of these bills passes, people lose part of their life when they could be exercising this right. So it takes 1 year, 5 years. It's like the New York case, where they people could not carry guns. They totally just rejected any kind of concealed carry permit. And they say, well, you can get a carry permit, but then you can't. You can get one, but we won't give one to you. Okay, so that takes part of your life. You can't get that part of your life back. I can't get back the part of my life that I lived in California. Of course, it was my choice to live there. That's why I left, one of the reasons. But I can't get back that part where my Second Amendment rights were denied to me in California. Well, that's a theft. That's a stealing of your rights. And that your time is your life. So the idea these people can keep passing these gun control laws when they are literally stealing the life during the life of that law, they are suppressing, oppressing, and removing your right, that is your God-given right to exercise, particularly your Second Amendment rights, during the time that law is in effect. So we need to stop them pushing these laws in the first place and making it a criminal offense to push something so obviously unconstitutional. Just my thoughts.
Well, I'm really liking the direction that our House is going. And a lot of the different things that they have, and that's all happened since we spoke last.
Let's talk about
how many votes they had.
I want to finish Brunson, because Brunson is a critical case for people to understand. Do you remember the basic, you want to give the basic, as they say in law school, could you give us the facts of the case?
Well, it was the Brunson brothers did a civil lawsuit, and they wanted to sue our government and made it all the way to the Supreme Court. And it was in regards to the when on January 6th, we had over 100, I think it was 147 legislators who had proof, a lot of investigation that they had done that the 2020 election was fraudulent, and they really wanted an investigation and were calling for an investigation. And somehow they got strong-armed into voting no on that day. After all the J6 happened, they went down into the basement, and we believe, you and I, this is our opinion, but they changed the vote. And are strong.
Well, they changed the
vote
of enough
to not have an investigation.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there was 385 legislators that voted no for an investigation, and it was the Brunson brothers believed that this was a dereliction of their oath of office. So that's who they were going to try to take out. But it was that the Supreme Court denied hearing the case on January 6th, which it was, they really thought that with the help, you know, there was a clerk that was helping them and giving them a lot of good advice. And they, since they put it on January 6th, it, you know, it really gave people a lot of hope. But I know there's an appeal coming. I'm not sure it'll do any good, but.
No, I don't think it will. And people should understand that. And I'm watching some news stories on this. Apparently the clerks are really helpful to a lot of people. It wasn't unique to Brunson.
Yeah.
And so so the Supreme Court staff is very good about helping you file motions for the Supreme Court. The judges, and I don't say justices because the Constitution very clearly in Article 3 says the Supreme Court judges. So there's another one of those assumptions that aren't true. And so the Supreme Court judges are very loath to take, you know, anything. There's like 178 courses where they wanted a writ of certiorari. It's one of those Latin words that's hard to pronounce. And I think of the 178, they approved one. You know, one case.
Yeah.
So it's not like
I think
it
was like
that.
There's a clerk that weeds them all out. A lot of them don't even, the justices don't even see them. It makes me sad that many people, there was over 50,000 letters written and it didn't make a difference. So,
no. And I remember saying that, you know, even the amicus briefs are better, but the letters, you can't lobby the Supreme Court. You know, they don't take that kind of, it's a whole different organization.
They don't even,
you know,
see them. I wonder if they even saw them.
Yeah, maybe not. But since they don't run for election, there's no point in worrying about it. You know, the only reason that our elected officials look at letters or count numbers or count phone calls is because that determines, you know, their standing with the folks that keep their job. Well, the Supreme Court already has their job, and they're under this ridiculous belief that they're there for a lifetime, which is nonsense. They're there for good behavior. So what they should be, they should have, in fact, 10 of the 12 should have been dumped after refusing the Texas case. Now, if the Brunsons, now here's something for Lloyd. So next time you guys are chatting, or if he calls in today, I'll talk about this. What they should do is file either something with Congress or with the Supreme Court saying that 10 justices, you know, should be removed for bad behavior. And I don't know where this would go. I'd have to go to both Congress and the judges themselves. Sue on behalf of Texas. Say, wait a minute. They said Texas, you know, didn't have standing. Well, standing's not a viable legal principle. You know, especially when it says in the Constitution that conflicts between the states have to go to the Supreme Court first. They have original jurisdiction, not appellate. In other words, you don't have to go through lower courts and appeal up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is constitutionally bound to take, they had no choice in this matter. They had to take the Texas case, and yet they didn't.
But you don't want to remove all 10 of them while we have a Democratic president, do you?
Oh, see, this is when politics. All right, so wait a minute. So this is a good point. All right, so the problem is that when you get political expediency, it's like, well, we have to get judges in while Trump's in office because they'll be good, you know. And then we can't let judges come in under Biden because they'll be bad. No. The proper position, and I know, I understand what you're saying, and I, to a large extent, I agree with you, but the proper position is we need to control the court through the Constitution. The court has violated the Constitution, and they have 10 judges that have violated that actually have violated their oath of office to support the Constitution, which clearly says, and I'll show you exactly where it says it, you know, Article 3, Section 1.
Don't do that until Trump's back.
Okay. All right. So, but if the Brunsons want to, it may take a while to do the suit. Let's go to the House first, you know, and say that instead of having the judges removed, let's say that they have to sue, that Congress has to reinstate that case in Congress, in the Supreme Court. So that Congress says that the Supreme Court has to take this case, has to take the Texas election case. I think we're onto something here. Wait a minute. Let's follow this through. I think there's a
Texas elections case, which is
yeah. Do you remember so the Texas case said that the citizens of Texas were disenfranchised from their vote because there was fraud in other states and because it was a national election, because it was an election electing electors, and the electors that were fraudulently elected in Arizona, New Mexico, Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. Took away the vote of Texans to have a full vote. It removed their vote because obviously fraudulent votes, were there, and it was up to the Supreme Court to disqualify those either states or districts that had the vote fraud. And I think the state should have disqualified themselves, like Arizona should have thrown out Maricopa County. And I don't care that it's 60% of Arizona's votes. There's fraud in Maricopa County. Maricopa County should be thrown out. And the other counties should count. The other 40% would determine the results of the election. And then we'd have Kerry Lake and, you know, Donald Trump. But that's what we might, if they want to pick up the lawsuit, don't go back to the Supreme Court. They've already said no. They're not going to turn around. They already have precedent for saying no. What we should do, and think about this and talk to Lloyd about this, can we go to the House and say that the House, you know, as part of something with Supreme Court of their author. See, the thing is we need to have oversight over the Supreme Court. Supreme Court is this ridiculously independent institution that has no accountability. So why don't we say to the House that they need to pass a bill requiring the Supreme Court to take the case because that's what it says in the Constitution. That might be a better way to go than appealing something that I think is going to get denied again. How's that for a thought?
Yeah. Loy, go on.
Loy, we're waiting for you. Well, send in the podcast. Send in the podcast. Mark the time.
I will.
It's 9:15, so 15 minutes into our chat. So from the 2-hour and 5-minute mark to the 2-hour and 15-minute mark, we presented this brilliant analysis of what to do. But here's what it says in the Constitution: the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States and treaties made or which shall be made affecting ambassadors, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, that's on the high seas, folks, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, that would be international law, to controversies between two or more states. To controversies between two or more states of cases arising under the Constitution, they have to take it. They have to take it. They just do. It's right there.
Okay. When was that written and who wrote it?
The Constitution? 1787.
No, Detective
Smart Aleck. Yeah. That's what you're asking. Okay. That's a good question. Let's look it up. I got Pianki in the line here, too. I want to get your report. So let me just bring him on here for a minute. Pianki, details on the Texas lawsuit. Do you know the dates? Do you know when it was filed? Otherwise, I'll look it up.
It was right close either before, after the election. But you're absolutely right. The courts should have heard those controversies between those states. And the states at that time should have produced evidence. Hopefully the states would have worked it out between themselves, therefore not wanting to go to the courts. But you've seen the same sort of action that would have came out of them working out between themselves when Pence refused to take the Trump electors. So you got a bunch of corruption all over the place.
Yeah, I don't think that was ever in the case because they're really dealing with the oath of office. But
December 11th, 2020.
Okay.
With December 11th, 2020.
9/11.
U.S.
9/11. That's interesting.
No, 12/11.
Okay.
December 11th, 2020. U.S.
12/11. Okay.
That Texas lawsuit contesting 2020 election results in Senate.
Okay, I'm gonna keep this here. Well, what's interesting is that, they didn't take all the battleground states, but that case should have been held. And I'm surprised that Lloyd didn't bring that into the case. Now, the Supreme Court's already said that they didn't have standing, but they couldn't have said that. The Supreme Court had no legal ability to say that they didn't have standing. In fact, Jonathan's taught us that standing is the biggest legal principle anyway. You know, because the Constitution says that Texas did have standing. Hold on just a second. The Constitution said that Texas did have standing in an Article 3, Section 2, when they said controversies between the states have to go to the Supreme Court. Pianki.
You know something? If you want to find out if the Supreme Court is right or wrong, see what Clarence Thomas say. That's your litmus test. He's the smartest one on the court.
Yeah, I think Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito are the only two that should be on the court. Everybody else needs to go. Diane, let's get back to you. I want to see if why the Brunson case was rejected in terms of strategy makes sense. Do you have a question on that? I want to make sure that you and everybody else gets it as to why it was rejected. Diane?
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Okay, you can
go ahead. You tell us what you think.
Okay, so what they did was they were trying to hold the members of Congress accountable to their oath of office. The Supreme Court, you know, unless they're making something up like Roe v. Wade or gay marriage, things like that, the Supreme Court always, you know, goes to the Constitution and more than that, they go to precedent. And as far as I know, there are no cases where anybody was ever held accountable to their oath of office, and the ruling of any court actually went in favor of that. And they probably wouldn't do that because there's nothing in the Constitution that requires allegiance to the oath of office. There's nothing in it that implies a penalty for failing to hold the oath of office. And quite frankly, I wouldn't want one because it becomes very subjective. This is another reason I think they rejected it. It becomes incredibly subjective to what holding the oath of office means. What if the left interprets the oath of office to support and defend the Constitution? And I've used this example before. It says, well, the Constitution says you have to promote the general welfare. You have to make sure people are taken care of. So anytime the Congress doesn't, you know, give everybody welfare, and the Supreme Court allows them to do that, they're all violating their oath of office, and they have a lawsuit on that. And that's a completely bogus lawsuit, but the left would do that. What if they say we have a right to life, and there's people out there with guns? Well, they might take your life. They can't have guns. That goes against my right to life. And any constitutional, you know, the Congress and the state legislatures that don't pass, you know, gun confiscation are violating my right to life. That's what they would do. So for many reasons, it's a good thing the Brunson case didn't go forward, even though they had the right idea. They just went about it the wrong way.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. That's my thought. Pianki, do you have a thought on Brunson? And then we have many things that Congress is doing.
No, it's confusing because things are all out of whack. And what I mean, it seems like people were willing to skip by A, B, and C and go to D, F, and G. That's the way I look at it. I say the power lies within, like, for instance, that bill in Illinois is for the state legislature to allow a law that would violate the U.S. Constitution. It's just baffling to me. It just baffles me.
Well, you know it's going to get overturned. Let me ask Diane this question, too. We know it's going to get overturned. We know it's unconstitutional. They did it anyway. So why do these people feel that they can do write a law that obviously is unconstitutional? They don't care, and they're going to get away with it. That law is going to have a life. So until that law is overturned again, which is what we were talking about earlier, this law takes away people's lives, part of their life, the life that they could be exercising their full Second Amendment rights. Why do they think they have the ability to do this?
There's no accountability. There's no accountability.
All right. But there is accountability if it's enforced, and that would be Title 18, Section 241. So the accountability is in law, but it's not being used.
Yeah.
So this is where groups, you've got groups, you know, you work with people on election integrity and things like that, but this is anything, I got to talk to Tina about working with gun groups, but this is where the gun groups have fallen completely flat because they should not only get these laws overturned, but they should punish the people that keep pushing laws that are obviously unconstitutional as a denial and oppression of the exercise and enjoyment of our constitutional rights under Title 18, Section 241 and 242 when law enforcement enforces unconstitutional laws.
It's hard to do that when your judicial system is corrupt and they won't hold them accountable.
Yeah.
So then you got to throw them out and it's clean house. That's what we need to do.
Okay, let's focus on cleaning house in a minute. I want Pianki, let's get Pianki's comment real quick, and then let's get back to how we clean house.
On the issue about the judicial system being corrupt, it's never tested the way it should be. Everybody want to go to the supreme rather than going to the inferior. It all starts with the inferiors at the state level, and I don't see that being played out. Everybody want to get on the bus and ride up to Washington, D.C., and go to the Supreme Court. You have the power in your own state within your own inferior courts in that state. You even got a Supreme Court of the state. Nobody uses that.
Well, let me ask Diane a question because she knows all kinds of stuff like this. Is federal law supreme to state law?
No.
Okay. Why?
And I think
I'm using this as an example as to why, to illustrate Pianki's point. Go ahead.
Well, I believe that if we clean up our local areas, it'll filter back up. And once we get our local areas in our, make sure that your sheriff is on board and that you can actually have accountability in your local area, clean up your politicians in your local area, and then start working your way up the food chain. And I think that it's the hard way to do it, but it's the right way to do it.
Yeah. Let me give you my answer to the question. Is federal law supreme to state law? For the same thing you said, no, but for a completely different reason. Because federal law and state law are completely separate. The whole point of the Constitution was to separate the jurisdiction. This is what federal. This is the definition of federalism. This is the definition of a republic in many ways. That the federal government has a very specific list of duties that are outlined in the Constitution. They cannot make up powers that are not delegated specifically in the Constitution. That's what the 10th Amendment is all about. We have a right to be free of anything that the federal government makes up. That is a constitutional right. So the 10th Amendment overrides anything that they do that is not specifically delegated to them. So federal law is never supreme to state law unless they have a jurisdiction in that particular area granted to them by the states. Most people don't understand that. And that's really the key.
Exactly. Federal courts both listen to those issues dealing with the federal government. Whiskey stamps, for instance. Commerce. Treaties with other countries. That's where the federal courts come in. But the state has all the power. But for some reason, society has been acclimated to believe that the first place you run when you don't, when daddy don't allow you, you run to mama. And they want to run up there to the Supreme Court. And that's why the Supreme Court, hey, they say to themselves, this isn't our responsibility.
Yep. And here's why they run to the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court has given themselves power that they don't have. They have judicial review. They've given themselves the power to make laws and regulations and policies. They've given themselves the power to make anything that they want, and they've also given themselves the power to be exempt from any oversight. That's the problem. All right, let's. I want to get back to Diane, and you mentioned some of the things. We've been over this a little bit on the show beforehand, but you're only here once a week. I just want to call back more often. But what struck you from Congress that you think is in the right direction? And feel free to list them individually, and we can hash them out.
Oh,
so what do you think?
I gotta find them.
Okay.
I gotta find them.
I can think of some of them.
No, I.
Mm-hmm. You post them.
I had a.
You
list
post them on.
I did.
Okay. Well, let's take what they've done already. They passed a bill cutting the funding for the 87,000 IRS agents. That's the first thing.
That was good.
They actually did that. So truck up one for
the no more omnibus bills. They're gonna. I think you can't like one item per bill. That was pretty awesome.
That's not what an omnibus bill, as I understand it. Because if it was only one item per bill.
I'm not looking at them at them yet, but I thought I read where they could, you know, they wanted to limit the amount of things that were on a bill.
Okay, which is good. Now,
no
one
more
subject
increases.
On a bill. One subject on a bill, you know, but if I do vaccine product liability, which is one subject, and my bill overturns the declaration of emergency, it takes, you know, shall not makes it shall. In a couple of different places in law, it gets rid of the vaccine injury fund because Big Pharma is going to pay it. And the fourth thing that I haven't really talked about a lot, but it also has a provision that says that states and the federal government cannot make it more difficult to bring a lawsuit against Big Pharma. That's five items. I couldn't, you know, if it was a single item, it wouldn't work. But it's still a single subject, vaccine product liability. I just want to make that clear. I mean, you know me, I'm a word guy.
Yeah.
So let's talk about.
He said that COVID
omnibus
mandates
bills.
Will be ended.
Well, so let's go back to omnibus bills. It's really important to get the concept of an omnibus bill because what they're doing, and this is absolutely critical, is that they're breaking the budget into 12 separate appropriations bills. So an omnibus bill is a bill that funds the entire government in one bill. 4,000 pages. Nobody has a chance to read it. No one knows what's in it until it's passed. Even then, you don't know what's in it because, you know, we talk about people not reading bills before they pass. I don't think they read them after they passed either. I don't think they have a clue. I think it goes on automatic pilot, and the bureaucrats take over.
Well, it says they must be a single issue, so I think that is better than my verbiage wasn't correct, but it's a
single
issue and allow
then,
at least 72 hours to read them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, talking about 72 hours, is that enough? What do you think?
That's not enough time.
Okay. Diane?
Well, if they put out, you know, if they don't drop the whole thing in 72 hours, if they actually start letting you read portions of it in advance, then it would be okay. But, yeah.
Well, there's a problem.
Would be good.
Yeah, there's a problem, though, because many bills go through several revisions and several, like, so say we submit a bill to Congress. Let's say our big tech bill. Our big tech bill goes to the Communications Committee. They look at it. They hash over it. You know, we get to the House first because that's the only place it's going to go, right? So they look at it. They hash over it. They change some language, and then they pass a version out of committee. Bill goes to the floor. Well, they add some more amendments, and they take away some more stuff, right? And then they pass a version of it that barely resembles what we sent them, right? Then it goes to the Senate. If they take it up, their committee is going to add even more things and take away more things, and then the full Senate is going to add and take away more things, and it's going to go back to the House. Well, unless, if they can't agree on the Senate version, then they have to go to a conference. So they get groups of the senators and groups of House representatives together, and they hash out yet another version of the bill. So you can, and if you do any legislative tracking, you go to a legislative website, and they'll show you the different versions of the bill. And that's why this is why we're going to establish a tracking function for our bills once I get a lot of bills into, or a few bills into the various legislatures. We're going to have a tracking set up here. I just need a new webmaster, and because the hospital killed my previous one. Go ahead. But that's the problem with publishing bills too early. Go ahead.
It had to be time for public review.
Yeah. It seems like, if you get 72 hours for every time that you have an update on it, you're going to end up at the end of the season and not have any bills.
What they're going to do.
I think we need to extend our hours of working.
Well, I think what they're doing is 72 hours on the final version. So whatever version has already passed or is up for a final vote. I think that's what it is. So in other words, whatever they agree to for a final vote, and it's probably in either house, probably just in the House. So when the House is ready to vote on the final version of a bill, yay or nay, that's when they put it up for 72 hours of review. And I'm with Bianchi. That's not enough time. I would go 30 days. That would be my time for a bill. And appropriations bills over $1 billion should be 60 days.
Those bills should be posted for public review.
Well, they are actually. They're posted. If you go to the I'm going to get to you in just a second here. But if you go to the legislative sites of both the House and the Senate of Congress, they do post each version. You get the vote. You get the original submission. You get the one out of committee. You get the one out of the floor. They do post those. Those are available for public review. The problem is nobody reads them. Diane, back to you.
Are you done with that one? You want me to keep reading?
Well, unless you had another comment on it. Unless you had a further comment on it. Okay. Continue, please.
COVID mandates will be ended during this, and including the funding for them, which is excellent.
Yep.
No more increases in the debt ceiling. Restoration.
Wait. Hold on. Let's go back to COVID. Unless you have a lot of other stuff, I don't want to hash over each one of these. You don't want to? You got more things to do?
I have.
Tell me.
Well, I had some other things that I wanted to discuss about.
Okay, so then why don't I let you comment on those, and then let's get to other stuff, because we've only got about 27 minutes left. So hold up Bianchi, hold up me. Tell me what you think of the remaining issues.
Well, we had a discussion with Dave Clement, you and I did, and I was asking him, and it was a Zoom and trying to pick his brain on what to do for our county. I asked him about, I'm concerned about our ballots in our county and our ballots in the state of Florida, that who prints them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've kind of gone over this one other time before, but in Florida, our oldest and our largest ballot printing company was printing. It was sold to Cathedral Printing out of Rome, New York in 2017, right after Trump's inauguration. And they print all the ballots for 2/3 of Florida. Their CEO is Marianne Gage, and she's a huge supporter of the Democratic Party. She donates a lot to Act Blue monthly, so I find that as a huge conflict of interest. But one thing that concerns me greatly is that our top SOE, Mark Early, his wife, she is one of the employees that works for this company here in Florida, but she won't go by Early and as her name. She goes by Stacy Rodriguez. So that is extremely concerning to me. And then when I was at, we had a meeting, one of my team and I had a two-hour meeting with Taffy last Friday. Taffy is our Secretary of Elections here at Santa Rosa County. And she was telling us of the, for our printing of our ballots, what's not was about just the postcards that they send out from our SLE's office here,
mm-hmm.
It's through a company called Evergreen, and it's an NGO. And so we're handing an NGO a whole lot of power because they send out all of our postcards to say, hey, are you still living at this address? You know, you haven't responded and, you know, you haven't voted in since the last election cycle or two election cycles. And then before, no one was ever having to do anything about these postcards. If they were never sent back, they just didn't do anything about it and left them and let our voter rolls get really blurred. But this company is responsible for mailing out all of these postcards, and that it was almost a carrot that I was asking, you know, why they picked this company. Like, well, they're giving us a good deal on postage. And it just made me really nervous because that name. And I'm, I don't know, there's a whole lot of coincidences that have happened in the last 2 years, but that name is very alarming to me, Evergreen. So that was Hillary Clinton's code name. So I asked, and I didn't know, I don't know anything about them, so I asked a few people to start looking into them. And I also asked Dave Clements the other day on our Zoom, and he feels like he doesn't have a lot of information on them either. So anybody want to do any investigation into this Evergreen company and find out if they're legit? So, and I also sent Dave Jersky, I forgot his first name. He's the Red Belly Road in Lake County guy.
Mm-hmm.
His last name is Jersky. And I asked him if he knew anything about Evergreen, and he doesn't. So we're going to have a lot of people digging into Evergreen because they have a lot of influence in our county. If they are completely responsible for passing out all the postcards to anybody, they have a lot of our personal information, let's just say.
Well, they know who's voted and who hasn't. They can sell that information to the Democrat Party or the Republican Party. They can sell that information anywhere.
Or not send the postcards at all.
Or not to the post. Exactly. Yeah. Well, we had we have an election bill in the works, and that Diana and I are working on. And one of the provisions that from my old election bill is that all registrations expire every year. That would take care of it. All the corruption, all the problems, and all the things are really taken care of by having all registrations expire. And so you just re-register, you know, and we can make it fairly simple. If you've already registered in your county previously, you've proven your citizenship with your birth certificate, passport, naturalization papers or something like that, and you haven't moved, and you can prove that you haven't moved. You know, you got a current driver's license at the same address that you registered under, and then you're good. However, if anything's different on all those things, you got to go to the office and start again. But that would take care of all this kind of stuff. There's so much that can be taken care of by simply getting rid of the registrations every year that you don't need the study. You don't have to look into we have to look into Evergreen for other reasons if they're printing the ballots. And I want to ask you about that in a minute too. But think of an issue regarding registration that couldn't be taken care of by having everybody's registration expire December 31st at midnight. Can you think of one? I can't.
No. I think it's a great idea.
Well, thank you. I have my moments.
It is.
Well, one of them is getting you off track when you're. What's that? Yeah, exactly. So, also too, just for a strategy, because for folks that don't know, I don't talk a lot to reporters when they come up before they come on the show a lot of times, so I never know exactly what's going to happen. If you have something in particular, you say, "Look, I really want to talk about something else. Just tell me." Just say, "Look, I've had enough of this.
Yeah,
I'm going to do this." And yeah, I know you did, yeah. But I'm saying that's okay. And that's cool.
I
that's perfectly
do want
cool.
to go through all of the rest of the. I just wanted to make sure that I got this in about the ballots, because if anybody has any information, please get in contact with.
How can I contact
you? We did find that.
Do you have some public either a public email or public or through the Action Radio Election Integrity group on Facebook, or how should people get in touch with you?
Yeah, Action Radio and Election Integrity Project on Facebook.
Okay.
So, but I would definitely still want to go through the legislative ideas that they are forced to get passed. I'm going to finish that in a little bit, but I just really wanted to make sure that this got in. So if anybody has any ideas, the company that owns Evergreen, the name, the family name is Keen, K-E-E-N. It's what one of my researchers dug out. But we still need to keep digging into them. If anybody's had any problems with that company or good things too. But it is a national company. It's not in it. I know that some people that I don't particularly trust that are in our county right now use them as well.
So and they print the ballots too. Wow, you can say
no,
you can name names
if you
have definites, but otherwise, if they're public people, we can name names if
no.
I don't. Okay.
No, but that is one question I did not ask Happy if they print the ballots as well. I need to ask that. I know that they
have
postcards and they handle all the postage and everything.
Yeah, that's crazy. Why doesn't the county do it? Why don't they do it themselves? Why would you contract that to a private company of privileged, personal, private voter information? Why would that ever go to anybody except
the
government itself?
Because they got the carrot. Because they got the carrot. It was, and that's exactly what I'm going to say Democrats do.
Go ahead.
They promised postage, cheaper postage. They're saving money.
How can they do that, though? How can they...
Yeah.
Doesn't the government have free postage to send to people?
No. They're paying
really?
$1.80 a ballot to mail those out.
So it's a ballot that they're okay. All right. Now, is this Evergreen company? So what is a private company having anything to do with our sacred ballots? Now, do we have anything like
this is not the ballots. This is the postcards. This is not the ballots.
Okay.
This is the postcards.